much information. And the bottom of it is the cost, whether people can afford to receive information and also to pass that information. And the issue of cost remains an issue. We cannot overemphasize that the former president, Thabo Mbeki, many times on the State of the Nation address, I'm sure more than four times, has been saying the issue of cost to communicate in this country is a problem. And nothing happens all those years until we realize that if we rely on the players on the market and everyone else without ourselves taking a key interest, it seems as if it was business as usual. That's why we later then developed the interest to continue and engage on this matter, because those people who seem to be entrusted with their responsibility to protect the public and make sure that the cost to communicate is within the reasonable limit could not do anything all those years. So we are mindful that when we do these things, sometimes others they start to say we want to interfere on what the market knows or what the market can do very well without anyone interfering. But the fact of the matter which is facing us is that it was not just that the committee or anyone just wake up in the morning and thought about this. It's a matter of if you go back to records, you realize that this industry in particular continue to ignore even when the head of state has made a call to say the host to communicate is not within the range and no one did anything from all the players and so on. Now, I'm sure that is water over under the bridge. Is it where we are? And we are determined to make sure that we engage on this matter until South Africa becomes number one or number two in terms of call to communicate in Africa in particular. Because we don't understand why we are where we are when it comes to call to communicate. Access Africa came with a study which is disputed by everyone probably in the industry, which we appreciate is not the problem, which put us at number eight. Now the problem is that after everyone is disputing or everyone is going to present today must tell us that disputing that research work and so on, where does South Africa then lie? Are we number one? If I'm not number one, why not? What are these things which are seems to be the challenge in the market, which make us not to be number one in terms of cheap or to communicate and so on? So I hope everyone representing would be able to take on that. We don't want to spend time on the issue of the MTRs because we won't waste our time. We are mindful and we understand that MTRs is part of the issue of cost, but not the actual. It's part of the elements to call for the cost to communicate, but it's not the D driver. And again, for that matter, some of you are disputing, they are saying there is no relation between MTR and the Empire Retail Price. I'm sure that helps us. But what you must tell us, what is it which is equal to the retail price? Here is some of you are disputing that MTR has got nothing to do about the actual retail price. Is that good? But then to present here, don't ask people to come and say which thing has this MTR and so on. Must tell us, this MTR has no relation to MTR and the actual retail price. We have these things which got the direct effect to that. And why are we not dealing with those things so that we bring the price down? So I don't want people to play around with MTRs and waste most of our time around that. We appreciate it has come, it's still there, the pricing hurt and so on. But the problem of that is that some of you in the market have already started to dispute the relevancy or the relationship between MTR and the actual price. So when we don't want to enter into that debate, you want a debate or submission which will take us forward as a country to realize the actual lesser cost to communicate so that our people can be able to communicate. I'm just raising those issues so that there's no ambiguity for some people they think that we don't understand anything about the market. There's that assumption sometimes that they want that politician talking, don't understand anything. So we understand those issues, we might understand that when. But we are perhaps very understanding of some of those issues and so on. But we hope that this presentation today will take us forward. Like I've indicated, that is the matter which we've got in interest exactly to deal with and so on. Without wasting more time, Top of my list, I've got the DOC as a department, which we think from our side should be leading us in this fight to this issue of to communicate and help us in terms of understanding how do we move forward around this particular matter and so on. We'll introduce everyone when I've got the list of who is here and so on, so that you don't feel like you're not welcome. We are all welcome. DDG, over to you, DDG Piri. I can see your team has changed. You came with another team too, very now they seem to be a total, completely new team. The same go with the regulator and so on. DDG?
Good morning. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, thank you for having us again in the hot seat. This time around on the new topic. Honorable Chairperson, today I am accompanied by Ms. Adelaide Masimola on my left. She is the director responsible for this project specifically. She also, Chairperson, deals with our statistical tools in the department. So she manages also a data warehouse that we as a department, working with ICASA, we have put together to ensure that we can have empirical evidence on addressing some of the issues in the sector. I also have Chairperson on my right, Ephraim Andom, who is, I want to point him so that people see him. Mr. Andom is the director responsible for regulatory impact assessment, Chairperson. So in the policy branch, what we're trying to do is to respond to what Cabinet had called an empirical evidence way of making policies to determine what impact do they have in the market. And we are seeing a situation where that work becomes a lot more important in the process of policy making. So as it is, Mr. Andom is helping us with that. So he's also involved with this project more closely. Chairperson, I will now start with the presentation. The topic we're addressing today, Chairperson.
DDG, sorry, before you proceed, no, there is no matter of agency, don't worry. There's no truth expedited today. The only thing that we want to request the parents going to operate for your presentation to sit that side. I'm told that the point there is not working. So the person will be operating just to request members that is taken just as in this one, so that the person to operate can sit. Yes, you are easy tech. And this is not a demolition, it's a eviction. It's the ICT technology which push him around, not me. DDG, sorry to, I know once you pick up the reading, when I stop you, you forget where you left, but can you try?
Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much. We have two documents, Chairperson, which will inform our presentation today. There is a program of action, a document that is looking like this, as well as the presentation. The two documents, Chairperson, is because we are actually presenting to you a program of action on the activities which we believe need to be undertaken, Chairperson. And having regards to the work that we do with ICASA. So the time frames are actually contained in the program of action. So in the presentation, we'll try and contextualize all of these issues, Chairperson. So, Chairperson, the mandate of the department, because it is important to highlight here the importance of roles, to create a vibrant ICT sector that ensures that all South Africans have access to affordable and accessible ICTs in order to advance socio-economic development goals in support of the African agenda and contribute to building a better world. With that, Chairperson, we note that the topic today is very important for us to highlight the powers that are articulated largely in the Electronic Communications Act of 2005 as amended. It says that the minister may make policies and policy directives to ICASA and enabled by Section 3 of the Electronic Communications Act. The Act gives minister a host of areas to which minister can make policies. We have isolated matters around spectrum, universal service and access. Also that policies can include guidelines for determining by ICASA of licenses, including incentives that may apply to individual licensees, and where the applicant makes binding commitments to construct electronic communications networks and provide electronic communication services in rural and underserved areas. And we have also isolated a very important issue around barriers to entry in the ICT market, which is that the Act makes provision for mechanisms to promote the participation of SMEs in the ICT sector. Further, Chairperson, the Act requires of ICASA to define ICT markets. In doing so, it identifies the retail and wholesale markets or market segments in which it intends to impose pro-competitive measures. It also sets out the methodologies to be used to determine the effectiveness of competition in the ICT markets or market segments.
DDG, the member is making a suggestion, that they seem to be having the document for some time. If you don't mind, just go quick on the background issues and go to the gist, to the choosing part of it and so on. But you can just proceed. You can proceed. I can see today I'm much comfortable with you.
And I'm very mindful
that you are in charge today. I can see. Proceed, please.
Chairperson, this provision that I'm going through informs by and large the gist of the issue. Because it is a market competition issue we're dealing with today, Chairperson. So,
proceed, DDG, don't worry. I can see today I'm in charge.
Proceed, DDG. So, Chairperson, the law also sets out pro-competitive measures that the authority may impose in order to remedy perceived market failures in the market, and declare that this is in the relevant markets and market segment is applicable to the significant market power. Set out a schedule in terms of which the authority will undertake periodic reviews and markets and market segments, as well as provide for monitoring and investigation of anti-competitive behaviors in relevant markets and market segments. Chairperson, that's a very important point I wanted to highlight. So what we're finding, Chairperson, is that in terms of that chapter 10 of the ECA, the procedure is to try and find the markets and also go into as far as proving in terms of the procedure which operators have dominance in the ICT market. Now, Chairperson, you didn't want to go into want us to go into details about the MTR issue, but safe to say that as the department Chairperson, in 2008, we conducted a study which benchmarked with South Africa, Brazil, Chile and Korea, India and Malaysia to assess the relevance of cost, usage, access and quality. And Chairperson, the study which was performed by BMIT confirmed to us that the cost of communication in South Africa in relation to those variables I've mentioned earlier earlier were high. I'll move quickly, Chairperson, to say that the progress as we see it today is that the first MTR voluntary reduction from a peak mobile rate of 1.25 cents per minute was initiated through negotiations between the ICASA and the telecoms operator as initiated by the former minister Nyanda at the time, resulted in a time pass which was adopted and ensured that the cost reduced in that way. Chairperson, you know, we know that ICASA also issued, in fact, conducted the market study and later issued the mobile termination regulations in 2010 and imposed pro-competitive measures in the market for mobile and fixed wholesale call termination services after following the required published glide path. Now, Chairperson, in slide 10, really, it's it demonstrates what the glide path has actually proposed on on-peak and off-peak times, Chairperson, particularly focusing on wholesale voice call termination rates. You can see, that Chairperson, that by March 2013...
I'll open the document. Oh, okay. You can put it there. I have to break here, Jim, again.
It's a difficult thing to fix, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Chairperson, because the numbers have had the document for some time, the draft part is actually also a public document, but safe to say that Chairperson, by March 2013, we're expecting the call termination to be only about 40 cents, Chairperson. The call termination rate to fixed location must be charged according to the table also indicated below. And Chairperson, this has a significant contribution to the reduction of those calls. Now, Chairperson, I want to move quickly to the policy interventions as you see them. Chairperson, in view of the dynamic nature of telecommunications market, government policy needs to resolve and enable the enablement of the change in the market conditions. The department has therefore reviewed and revised the program of action which informed some of the activities which resulted in the activities of 2010. Current Chairperson, and this is where we can look at the program of action which were put here. We are monitoring, Chairperson, and evaluate changes in the wholesale and retail prices of fixed and mobile. The mystery here, Chairperson, that we do not know at this point in time how does the effect of wholesale affect retail. So we have to gather empirical evidence to demonstrate that there is a correlation between the two. Wholesale does have an effect to retail. So our actions, we are proposing to develop a monitoring plan, to implement that monitoring plan in terms of its effect with respect to retail, measure the impact of the MTR reductions on retail prices, as I have said. On average, calling time rates in South Africa, Chairperson, to date, to determine progress with respect to that. The program of action, Chairperson, that we as a department are looking at, we are also identifying the matter of monitoring the implementation of leasing regulations. So I'm reading slide 14 at this point in time, Chairperson. And when you look at the program of action where we have objectives, all of those are listed in the program of action. Of importance is to note the timelines. For instance, our monitoring process goes up to March 2014 with respect to the first issue, Chairperson. And the facilities leasing regulation published by ICASA in 2007 We are going to monitor the current, the implementation of those facilities listed in Chairperson on a quarterly basis, and we hope to make our observation by 2015 on their impact. So from time to time, gather information and interpret the impact of that information. At the end, the person will prepare a report with recommendations on the achievement of the regulation. It is largely a role that the policymaker has to make, because at a point where ICASA also seeks to understand the impact of this regulation, we should be able to have the report that informs our take in this. And at the end, we may be able to benchmark such a report to present with other countries. On slide 15, Chairperson, develop a national standard basket of monthly telecommunication service consumptions and benchmark cost of the standard basket in selected OECD countries. Chairperson, here we have looked at the proposals of the OECD, who is implementing this model in their markets. We know that in terms of Telecom Communications Act of 1996, Telecom was regulated through a CPI. And Chairperson, because our understanding is that the expenditure by consumers has an effect on the income of people, it is reasonable, therefore, to measure the bucket of services and those products through the CPI. So we're going to design and develop a methodology for building a representative composite services to include in the basket. And this is a discussion we will take with ICASA so that we can see how we go about that. And the basket can be updated as usage pattern changes so as to measure the telecommunication service usage. On the next one, Chairperson, still on slide 15, we think that ICASA should be able to develop services to be included in the CPI basket in order to customize the basket to be telecoms relevant. So there is experience in this regard, and because the CPI is reviewed year to year, Chairperson, this is also an indicator on that. And we'll roll consultations with the ICASA with respect to this issue to determine the contents of such as our contribution. ICASA is going to be responsible to develop, or maybe if, for instance, the policy drive on that is accepted by ICASA, develop such a model, Chairperson. On slide 16, Chairperson, we are currently reviewing the ECA, wherein we are consulting with ICASA on a number of issues. Chairperson, the committee informed us that because there's been a decision to do an ICT policy review, so our amendments to the ECA have to be of technical nature. In the consultations, Chairperson, we had sought to look at efficiencies within ICASA to determine if any of the in terms of the consultation processes, if they can be shortened and all things like that, to help them make decisions quicker. And we know here, Chairperson, that the PAJA Act is primarily in terms of consultation processes, and those are some of the things that we're trying to do. So we have not concluded our consultations with ICASA on the ECA amendment, Chairperson, but we do see that some of the issues may impact the issue of competition. To effect legislative and institutional changes to tighten coordination between the ICASA and the Competition Commission and to avoid forum shopping. This is an important area, Chairperson, and we are in progress to discuss that particular issue, specifically to see if we know that currently they have an MOU that they're implementing, but there may be other important issues we can help them in this regard to strengthen their regulatory capacity. On slide 17, we are going to review the Electronic Communications Act to increase the effectiveness of USAFA and ICASA in the advancement of government strategic intent. In this case, the new ICASA Act is in progress and specifically to include regulations of course in retail prices and national roaming. To finalize, the revised national broadband policy aligned to the Vision 2020 consultation with provinces and the government. We are currently in the consultation stage, Chairperson. Chairperson, with regards to the broadband policy, I know that you have not really invited us to make detailed presentation to that because the document is now ready for public consultation, but we feel that there are provisions which may also have an impact in the issue of how to communicate, and specifically on the future of the data market specifically. So we are also submitting here, Chairperson, that the broadband policy which has been reviewed now can be made, or rather maybe the department can make a presentation in detail into the policy, because I'm not able to do that here today. The next Chairperson, facilitate and support the rollout of broadband infrastructure programs and ensure that it is accessible and affordable. This is a very important issue contained in the revised broadband policy, Chairperson. In that policy, proposals are made with respect to how the Vision 2020 can be achieved and the integration thereof. The policy will go to Cabinet and there will be released for public comments. We are also in that policy consulting ICASA fully. We are also recommending or taking action to promote prepaid broadband and internet subscription. The action here, Chairperson, is to recommend, is to implement the recommendations and monitor and report on the implementation of these proposals. Explore the application of a broadband incentive to encourage private sector infrastructure investment prioritizing rural and underserved areas through the Universal Service Fund. This proposal is also contained in the broadband policy, strategy rather, on how expansion of broadband infrastructure can reach rural areas. As it is in the country, in many rural areas, Chairperson, accessing broadband services is a difficulty. Although mobile operators have done a lot of work with respect to 3G, but in rural areas, Chairperson, it is a challenge to simple access internet. So we are also trying to see how investments can be driven to ensure that. Chairperson, this is important because the data market driven by broadband becomes the important segment of the telecoms market as we move into the future. The next issue, Chairperson, is to design incentives to encourage investment in local innovation, research and development capabilities. It is important, Chairperson, because the Department of Science and Technology has developed a ICT R&D roadmap, which roadmap, Chairperson, proposes a number of activities which are going to, for example, support applications development, the use of the broadband infrastructure once it is in place, and we feel that we need to align that important work that the Department of Science and Technology is doing to promote broadband usage. So our action here is to develop a strategy and the implementation plan to promote mobile internet applications. To support the implementation of DFC ICT R&D innovation roadmap by increasing through training and investment in application development. This will also support the country spend in the research and development program. As a person, we have a busy slide here which talks about mobile and call rates per minute as at 25th of November 2012. What has happened here, we have a comparison of the products offered by various operators. And the, summary of that chapter 7.
Quite busy indeed.
It is quite busy indeed, chapter 7, but I'll make it easy for you. Slide 23, chapter 7, makes a summary of the high mobile call rates as we have them. By Vodacom, MTN, Cell C, and the black painted section there is the mobile termination rate. So what we have done, chapter 7, we have compared the product offerings by the operators to compare where they are to date. So in essence, chapter 7, what it means is that Vodacom's mobile call rates percent have not decreased that much, as you can see on the blue line there, chapter 7. We're also observing that MTN's call rate have not significantly increased. We observe that since Cell C introduced the Cell C 99 cents real call rate, the competition in that market is high and Cell C's offering is significantly lower. We are also here comparing the glide path chairperson to demonstrate that as of 2012 September, the interconnect mobile rate has significantly decreased. So this is the summary of what we're doing in the two slides, chairperson, is to compare the call rates. So chairperson, and the difficulty with this exercise is that it is easy to dispute these statistics because offerings changes from time to time. Like I highlighted earlier, the challenge for us is how do we know if the consumer is getting the benefit when the design of product can again recoup what people may have lost in terms of their businesses in a mobile termination. This is the big question. And this is where we feel that we have to monitor the implementation of this particular program, chairperson.
Can you repeat that, DG? I hear English. I just can't understand what you're saying. maybe it's me alone, but I don't want members to raise that. Probably if you can just repeat it. In African English, mate.
Yeah, let me go there and see into chairperson. Chairperson, maybe let me start here. We have an activity together with ICASA to use empirical evidence to determine prices in the market. We are enlisting a study on broadband retail broadband prices. We are going to undertake a study to use, for instance, the exercise on broadband, where we understand that broadband prices in the country are also high. Although we can determine chairperson, the broadband market first and understand where the costs may be hidden and what model is implemented by operators to determine broadband prices. At the end, chairperson, the challenge we have is how do we ensure or how do we understand that when an operator designs a product of, say, a prepaid broadband service, some of our findings through our study mechanism, which we are going to do, that can have a triple effect to ensure that the consumer's access to affordable broadband is therefore realized. Peter's presentation, probably when he comes here, will just say that the challenge, even though we want to conduct service on retail, because product offerings always changes, you can only determine, as of now, for instance, we understand that the rate we are comparing there remains high, but the product offerings regularly change. And this is the exercise that is a challenge to us as a policy maker and a regulator to determine, do you have the benefits of what you are, for instance, charging, or the benefits of lowering interconnect, in this case, to product offering, which is the benefit to the consumer, Chairperson. So, Chairperson, on slide 26, as I conclude, Chairperson, and we call this a policy intervention, in view of the challenges being experienced, the objectives of the mobile termination rates regulation of 2010 following the policy interventions are needed. The amendment to the ECA in addressing matters which hinders competition and other related matters, Chairperson, needs to be observed by the department and implemented upon through policy directives. The imposition, Chairperson, of a flat rate on mobile voice calls in South Africa needs to be studied to determine its relevance in today's market. You raised this issue, Chairperson, during the discussion as well. The standardization of national roaming retail prices for mobile services is necessary. Regulation of transparency in the pricing and the publication of mobile retail prices, Chairperson, we think is a very important policy issue. Chairperson, this in the nutshell conclude our observation on what constitutes our program of action, Chairperson, from the department side. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, DCG. I so wish to always see you on song like today. Members, that's the presentation from the department. But what I've noticed from the presentation, there seems to be an overlap with the role of the regulator. Now, I want to check with members that it would not be better that you allow the regulator also to present. Then can combine the DOC and the regulator questioning because they seem to overlap if you listen more of the thing. And I must say, it would seem that although the department is not saying so, but our insistence of harmonization and synergy in the work of the department and the entities seem to be working very well. If you listen to the presentation of the EDG, it will show that ICASA is no longer an island. It's part of the ecosystem because from time to time you go to the regulator and indicate what the regulator should and what the department is doing and so on, which I think is a good sign of cooperation in terms of various entities, different responsibility within government and so on. ICASA, we will just go to you. I've got 25 questions for you, DDG. I hope ICASA on their presentation will reduce those questions. So by the time when ICASA finish, maybe I might have five. But it will depend on the presentation by ICASA. ICASA, you can set up for a presentation. DDG, don't go too far. I can see you crossing the floor now. It's okay. Members, when we open, I forget to indicate that today the Centec Tower is will be 50 years old, which I think is a very important milestone. Although 50 years younger than the African National Congress, I must say. tower in Preston or something. Yeah, the one is. Yeah, it's 50 years today, but it's 50 years younger than the AZ. I know it was built in front of Honorable Murutu Wako, you should remember it very well. You were 20 years during that time. You were an adult at that time. But I must thank the chairperson of ICARA to continue to bring the young EU. These days we have been very young. Thanks to the chairperson of ICARA. Continue to do so that it becomes younger and younger every age. Members, I'm told that within us we've got a competition commission, Z Communications is here, ATA and Telkom. Is there any difference between ATA and Telkom? Okay, fine. But ATA and Telkom is also here. SOSI is also with us. Vodacom is also here. Neotel is here, although some are still coming, I suppose, but it's also here. And then we've got the members of the press who are here with us, and our own PMG, always say KPMG, PFG is also here. But I think on behalf of the committee, although we did that, but we just want to congratulate the CEO of CLC, Alan Northcraig, for the ICT Personality of the Year Award, who he has received as a South African youth. But I don't know you, where are you when? Where is the CEO for this? They don't know you, they want to see you. So if you see him, don't worry, my story is falling within the range of your home. But you'll see him when he presents. He's within the range. I'm sure you might find some service level agreement, probably. I know that a person of the CASA might be jealous, but I've learned that one company do have a certain level of agreement with many other companies, so I think that can also be applied in this instance and so on. I'm told that SMART is also here. I avoided to mention the names because I've got some difficulty with the pronunciation of the names. We'll study them. We'll do that the next later and so on. That's why I just learned with the company. Dr. Mube? I'm sure that what I've said is not something your spirit. Instead, it was too much text so that your spirit agreement went higher than the others. So,
thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. I just want to express my sincere gratitude for the guidance that you have given us over time, especially this area of working in a spirit of collegiality with DOC and other concerns in our portfolio. And I also want to thank our own minister who has really encouraged this spirit of working together. So there is unity in DOC in diverse activities. We know who we are. They know who they are, yet for our Rainbow Nation, we count for nothing except doing things to fulfill the bigger mandate of our country, the aims and aspirations of our country, set forth by our founding father who wanted communication to be a human right. And as a regulator, we feel obliged that we will not allow Ubaba Mandela to turn in his grave and find that the cost to communicate for our people is still very high. Having said that, I also want to emphasize one thing, that as a regulator, we want to be creative and flexible And yet under all times we want to make sure that we abide by the law, either the law itself or the spirit of the law. And we have thus far succeeded to do a lot along those lines. But what happens, more Ellen who retire and come back and then be honored and retire again, they take the honors. But we really appreciate the cooperation of all other captains of industry. They are also willing to cooperate. There may be some discourses here and there, but we will try our utmost best to get them. I have with me my councillors at the back here, Councillor Sopikwa and Councillor Lebua. You can already see that in the council we are working as a team. And that's why when you look at our performance, you ask yourself, why are we wearing the same jacket? Because it is that spirit that we want to cultivate, to develop a team as
you mean the black card. The jacket in the black card, that's all of you.
Yeah, he's even wearing a black jacket. Councillor Stark, who is going to lead us in this. He has not gotten a bigger beard shave, but you can see it's coming slowly. Yeah, it is in that spirit that we really want to build this. I want to thank you all, Honorable Chair and member of the committee, for inviting ICASA to make a presentation on this important subject. And I will allow my two colleagues, Councillor Stagi, to take leadership on this, and he can assign and Dr. Hutes and others to add value to this presentation. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Honourable Chairman, Honourable Members, and fellow stakeholders for the opportunity to make the presentation. I'm assisted by my team, Peter Hutes on my left, Christian Schlanger over there, and Luang Kelly behind the Chairman. We are very aware that the cost to communicate is far too high in South Africa. In this presentation, we will attempt to tell you some of the things that we have done and some of the many things still to be done to address this issue. And we'll be covering the list of contents as shown there. The way that ICASA facilitates communications in South Africa is as follows. Services can't be offered without telephone numbers, without spectrum, without type approval, without the review of connection agreement, interconnection agreements ensure fairness. And ICASA is the only body that does this in South Africa. ICASA plays a major role in keeping the South African economy ticking over. ICASA is there when a plane wants to land, when a ship wishes to dock at one of our ports, or when there's a special conference or special sporting event. This is where the majority of ICASA's resources in terms of manpower and finances are expended. Less than 10% of ICASA's budget is allocated directly to regulatory work that aims to change the structure of the communication sector, as we know, conducting regulatory steps on interconnection, new spectrum band plan regulations, as well as various broadcasting-related regulations, such as must-carry, digital migration, and election regulations. And most of our effort is spent on those issues there, the production work, the run-of-the-mill work that many people in this room probably don't even know that we do, but the operators are certainly well aware of it. We're guided in this by government policy, and government policies to address high prices through the introduction of competition, and this is covered particularly by the Competition Act of 1998 and the Electronic Communications Act of 2005. And in terms of the ECA, ICASA can regulate prices where a licensee has dominance in the market and the market is not competitive, and this is governed by Chapter 10 of the Act. And government policy economy-wide is such that excessive prices are viewed as an outcome of a lack of effective competition in the provision of specific services. The Competition Act covers all economic activities within the boundaries of our country and has a bearing on all activities of ICASA. The Carlton powers related to price regulation are linked specifically to activities within the communications sector, particularly related to the infrastructure over which communication services may be provided. And as the DOC mentioned earlier, we do have a memorandum of understanding with the Department, with the Competition Commission, where we, which regulates, where we deal with each other. I'd like to now move on to trends in retail voice buses, which is only one of the areas relating to cost of communicating. But it's an important one. It's one that affects most people in the country. This set of four graphs you see here is shows the trends in the price of the least expensive prepaid voice tariffs. And as you can see, there's been no real change in nominal advertised tariffs over the last 3 years. And here we're using an OECD methodology, a basket approach, where a consumption pattern is described for different types of users, and the prices of corresponding services for each provider are used to calculate the resulting cost for each type of user. And the authority selected three of the baskets, there are five available, but we only took three of them, and we show them on here. The bottom one, the blue line, is the low basket, where a consumer makes 30 calls a month. The middle one, the red line, is the median user who makes 300 calls a month. And the top one, the green line, is the high user who makes 900 calls a month. And these baskets are used to calculate the average monthly fee per basket. And there was no change in nominal tariffs since the reduction in tariffs in mobile termination rates, you'll notice. The real change came when Cell C reduced prepaid voice tariffs by 66% by introducing their 99 cents for real package. Last year. And the 99 cent for real pack tariff remains the cheapest nominal prepaid tariff plan in the market since May 2012. And the reduction in the MTN monthly fees, which you see on the bottom right-hand side, was due to a reduction in voice tariffs from 1.85 per month in 2009 to 1.75 per minute in 2010. This graph shows the lowest cost prices. These are the most expensive tariffs from the same operators. So we have the lowest, the cheapest tariffs and the most expensive tariffs. And you'll see here that there's absolutely no change whatever. So while there's been some small improvements in the advertised nominal tariffs on at the bottom end of the scale, the cheaper tariffs, there's been none at all at the top. So in terms of these tariffs, just to give some numbers, M10 and Vocom have the same price for the high tariff at 58 Rand. The middle one is 19, but you can see that these prices are significantly higher than the previous graph, as they are unchanged. And they range from 58 down to 150. Okay. The issue that consumers have to deal with is one of tariff transparency. We've shown you two very different possible tariffs that a consumer can be faced by. And the question is, how does this consumer choose a tariff? And here we have the number of tariff plans from the three cellular operators, 6, 4, 5, and 3 each. So the mobiles offer around about 5 prepaid tariff plans on average, and if we were to include contract packages, there are over 75 packages to choose from between the four operators. Is this providing the customer with a choice, or is this serving merely to confuse the customer? Unlike postpaid and top-up, prepaid customers buy a SIM card, they don't buy a tariff plan. And switching tariff plans within an operator to take advantage of available promotion is cumbersome. So the fact that there are multiple tariff plans doesn't really help the typical prepaid consumer. This graph shows the comparison between the effective tariff and the...
Can you go back from the last one?
Yes, sir.
Go again, your... This one?
Yes.
Yeah, can you repeat?
The last thing I said, the switching tariff plan...
Oh, started affect.
Yeah, that's good. All right. The mobiles offer about 5 tariff plans each, for now. If we were to include the contract packages, there are over 75 packages to choose between the four operators. So consumer with choice, or is the purpose of this to confuse the consumer? And unlike postpaid and top-up contracts, prepaid customers buy a SIM card. They don't buy a tariff plan, they buy a SIM card. And you ought to change tariff plans with same operators to change from, let's say, the 4 prepaid per second to the Vodacom for less, looking at the first two of those tariff plans. It's not all that easy for the prepaid consumer to do. It's not impossible, but it's a cumbersome process. Does that clarify, sir? Okay.
Okay.
You remember that I showed you a couple of slides ago some graphs where the nominal price of a call hadn't changed at all for the expensive ones and hadn't changed very much for the cheaper ones. That's the advertised price, the headline price. But if you look at the effective retail price, there have been significant changes. So this is for prepaid calls, where we have taken the total number of rands from the four operators have earned from prepaid calls, and we've divided that by the total number of minutes of prepaid calls that the four operators have sold to give us the average cost per minute. And you can see there's a significant change here over the last few years. It shows some interesting facts. The effective cost of a call is reduced by 34% in the last few years. But the total revenue and the network utilization both increased. And that means that a decrease in the price of a call has led to a reduction, an increase in both volume and revenue generated. And recall that all of this has taken place during a period of reducing termination rates. So whilst there's no direct link between the wholesale termination rate price and the retail headline price, there is an effective link. And you can see there are quite significantly a reduction of 24%. And an increase in volume and an increase in revenue. So the operators are making more money by selling their services more cheaply. A very important point. Ecasa has had other quiet successes in the area of cost to communicate. Not all of these are as a result of regulations. Negotiations with Centec have produced a reduction in the fees for community radio and television broadcasters of 65% and 3% respectively. Some of them were paying such a high monthly fee that they could have bought more than one new transmitter a month before these fees were reduced. Similarly, in the data world, negotiations with Telkom produced a reduction in the price of their IDC product of 30% in April this year. This has played a significant role in ISPs being able to offer faster, cheaper, and even unlimited data packages. Nevertheless, the biggest single factor influencing the recent fall in data prices is competition in international connectivity. With the arrival of CECOM in 2009, CECOM's arrival meant an immediate reduction in international connectivity charges of some 35%. The prices continue to go down with the arrival of other cables. And data prices have fallen from a typical price of about 85 rand per gigabyte to somewhere around 27 rand per gigabyte since 2009. And this is important because it exposes the high cost of local connectivity. It remains more expensive to get a connection from Joburg to Cape Town than to get a connection from Joburg to London via Cape Town. This does not make sense, but it's the reality.
The reality is they're not making sense.
Some of our concerns relating to the voice market. Remember, we looked at voice and data and broadcasting markets and the cost of communicating all of those, and of course postal market. Is the level of on-off tariff differentials by the two large mobile operators, Vodacom and MTN. And also the on-net promotions by Vodacom and MTN could further increase this on and off-net differential. And international voice tariffs are less than national tariffs in many cases. Cell C has an 85% international tariff, Vodacom 89 cents versus 89 cents. Compare that to the 1 rand and 4 cents industry effective tariff that we showed you in the earlier graph. And some of the operators, Vodacom offers calls at 89 cents to 52 countries. MTN offers free calls to some countries. Dulce at 85 cents to 50 destinations. ATA varies from 2.50 to 176 rands per minute. All operators except for ATA offer cheaper international calls than local calls. This is perhaps a function of the competition in international calls, the higher level of competition in international calls than in local calls. Moving on now to call termination. And the regulation of termination rates, I need to explain this better to you. On the left-hand side, you've got the origination of a call, and on the right-hand side, you've got a termination of a call. Whenever someone calls someone, end user A makes a phone call to network A, that call will then be terminated on either the same or a different network with the user B. So we have someone on the left-hand side making a call, and the operator on the left-hand side raises an origination charge, which is paid by that caller. And that call is terminated on the right-hand side, and the operator on the right-hand side charges the operator on the left-hand side a termination ball charge in order to terminate the call. And again, the caller pays the sum of those two. The class introduced a glide path based on evidence of costs incurred by licensees. The difference in methodology between fixed and mobile was justified at that time in that the end user pays the network access fee to access the fixed network, but this is bundled in the mobile market and also almost insignificant in the prepaid market. What high termination rates do is they represent a price floor for the retail price of a new entrant. It's not possible to sell a call to your customers at a price lower than the termination rate, because if you did so, you would be instantly making a loss and out of business. And high termination rates also retard efficiency within a firm because it hides the inefficiencies. And you no doubt you've read the research ICT Africa research paper, which was out here earlier, which addresses this issue very eloquently. And the solution is to establish a cost base for call termination. And this cost base needs to be based on cost. And introduce a regulated bypass towards this cost base. But whilst we currently have a termination rate of 56 cents, and Cell C, for example, is offering their 99 cents deal to any number and any network at any time. In other words, both on-net and off-net, there is no on-net and off-net differential. Of that 99 cents, some of it goes to that. 56 cents goes to the termination rate. And 26 cents goes to the distribution and billing systems. And so we will, I suspect, at some stage, not yet, don't hold your breath, but we will at some stage reach a point where call charges become low enough that it actually becomes more expensive to bill for calls. And we will have flat rate calls. And this has happened in other places in the country, in the world, but we're a long way from that here. And I hope that we will get there. In terms of the glide path, we started with we promulgated call termination regulations in 2010. The first cut, and there was great argument from the operators about this, but the first cut from 89 cents to 73 cents happened in March 2011, and then the second cut happened from in March 2012, from 73 cents to 56 cents, that's where we are now. And then the last stage of this is next March next year, when we go 56 to 40 cents, and that will be a flat rate across a peak and off-peak time for mobile termination rates. And at the bottom here, we have a table that shows the percentage reductions. Initially, we started at 1.25 for the termination rate. Previous process, the termination rate had changed significantly before that. I'll show you a graph of that. So there was a voluntary reduction bringing it down to 89 cents, which is a 29% reduction. And then in March, the 73 cents, an 18% reduction, and then 23% reduction. And the reduction to come is 29%. And the current type of expires in March 2014. That doesn't mean that we don't expect the process to continue. But our regulations require us to review the glide path in 3 years' time, so we will be doing so. We intend to review the regulation of termination rates in the 2013-14 financial year, particularly looking into the costs versus the benefits of future regulation, as well as remedies necessary to foster increased competition. Such remedies may include asymmetric termination rates for smaller players, which we currently have. However, this is not a foregone conclusion, and any determination will be evidence-based. This next slide is one that's easy to be confused about. I must emphasize that it only shows one of several scenarios, and it shows the link between wholesale and retail rates for off-net calls, and this applies particularly to a smaller operator who has the bulk of his calls going off-net. You'll notice that we've kept at the top the nominal rate of R2.50 per minute, although that is not necessarily true. And you'll see that the reduction in termination rate, just by looking at the difference between the nominal rate and the termination rate, gives us an increasing margin for the smaller player. The reason it doesn't give an increasing margin to the bigger player is because the bigger player mostly has on-net calls and incoming calls rather than outgoing calls. The smaller player has regulated pricing power because he now has a change in his profit, which you can see highlighted there at the bottom. Shine all of it. Doesn't reach across. Okay. And this increased profit margin makes room for price competition. And we have seen that with the introduction of Celsius 99 cents a reel tariff plan. They were unable to do that before the interconnection rate came down to 56 cents this year. Now they're able to do that. This conceptual illustration shows that a reduction in termination rates does create the space for the smaller entity to reduce retail prices and therefore introduce price competition, and we've seen that. The reduction in termination rates is not a direct link to the retail price, rather it gives the operator an opportunity to have some flexibility. The termination rate represents the minimum price that an operator can charge for an off-net call. Termination rates are impacted only a concern for small operators where the majority of calls are made from their network to another network, and the reduction in termination rates therefore reduces the barriers to the cost of off-net calls for the smaller operator and thus supports the ability for the smaller operator to compete on price. It is the authority's preliminary view that the reduction in termination rates has assisted Celsius and ATA in being able to compete more effectively in the market. Celsius and ATA are likely to have their own views on this matter. But once you do have smaller operators competing on price, then there becomes pressure on larger operators to also compete, whereas previously perhaps they have said that there is no need to do so. The termination rates has also had impact on Telkom as the dominant fixed line operator. And you can see from this graph where we have the top of the graph, we have the red line, which is the interconnection payments that Telkom was making, and the blue bars are the interconnection revenue that Telkom was receiving. And those have both changed, but what the difference between them has changed significantly, which is the gray bar at the bottom. And what this means is that between 2008 and now, Telkom is paying 2 billion rand a year to the other operators less on termination charges than they used to. Their net position is improved by 37% based on purely on termination call reduction, rate reduction. So what's the future for termination rates? This graph shows us the whole period from 1994 onward, when we had the introduction of mobile operators, and the termination rate at that stage was about 21 cents. And then it went up to, it went up very quickly in 2001 and 2002 when to 125 cents when there was a potential competitor coming to the market. And then we have regulated it down, firstly in 2010 with a voluntary reduction, and then from 2011
through to next year with the light path. Now, what's going to happen in the future, we don't yet know, because we will still have to determine that. But the questions we need to ask is, will further reductions harm all stakeholders, or will they help them? And I refer you to the research paper from ICT Africa. And 5.9, that's the one with the graph of the volume and the price decrease, shows that a small reduction in retail prices led to an increase in revenue. And any future changes in rates will be evidence-based and will be pushing prices closer to the costs of real cost of termination. But in order to do that, we will have to carry out a market review and we will have to do the modelling, and this, as I think we've told you before, is a slow and expensive process. In terms of achieving universal service, this graph is an interesting one. It shows in yellow the number of households, or the percentage of households, that have no access to communication at all. And as you can see, that percentage over the last 3 years has dropped from 15% to less than 10%. And so in other words, we are achieving some universal service. We are reducing the number of people who are unable to communicate at all. The blue graph, which is also reducing, is the number of households that have fixed lines. This is also going down. This is not a healthy situation to be in, but it's the reality. And the green one, which is going up dramatically, and is now some 33%, is the households where at least one member in a household has access to the internet. 32.9% of households currently have access to the internet. And the number of households with fixed line access to communications continues to decrease. Access to the internet is growing because of mobile telephony. It must be remembered that the mobile telephony sector is part of the private sector. It's not the mobile operators are not state-owned entities. Fixed lines are not as relevant as they should be, and we'll address that in a moment. And the private sector mobile operators have made significant progress in achieving universal service objectives, both in terms of providing connectivity of any sort, voice connectivity in particular, which is generally the first one people get, and also data connectivity, internet connectivity, which if it's hot enough, we call broadband. But all broadband connectivity is in fact connectivity to the internet. And we are achieving this with the assistance of the private sector to a significant extent. We're not there yet, though. This slide tries to address some of the reasons why fixed lines are losing relevance. On the left-hand side, you've got the price for a fixed line in, and these are just comparing two different possibilities. There are, as I said, there are many different options, 75 different packages to play with on this alone from the mobile operators, so we simply compare two of them. And on the left-hand side, we have the cost of a data bundle, a particular data bundle. We've chosen a fixed line one, and we've chosen a mobile one, and we have 330 rand compared to 150 rand for relatively comparable data bundles. And on the right-hand side, we have, for this relatively low-cost fixed line connection, we've got a maximum speed of 1 megabit per second, and on the right-hand side, we've also got a theoretical possibility of 21.6 megabits per second. I must emphasize that 21.6 is not the speed that you will get in the real world. That's the speed you will get if you're the only person using that cell, the base station. So if you have two, you'll get half that. If you have three, you'll get a third of that. This is why fixed line connectivity is important. Because when you have a fixed line, your connection between you and the concentration point is dedicated to you. It's yours, and yours alone. Whereas when you're using spectrum for that last mile connection, then every user of that particular piece of spectrum on that base station is sharing that connection. And so, as we say earlier, later on, fixed line connectivity is the ideal. It's what we aim for. We have to use spectrum for several reasons. First, for mobility, and secondly, because it is far cheaper to run. roll out connections in the short term. But in the long term, our objective is to have every household with a fixed line connection, if possible. But the problem that we have at the moment...
Can I ask you, you see, I like the last part, but because you see, I'm some members are quite aware. We're hearing a lot of submission from various operators and so on, and about the issue of spectrum, the other thing, the importance of water, data, and so on and so on. But can you just repeat the that part?
Yes, what is this kind of business?
Thank you, Councillor. Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. To simplify, what this graph shows is that if I'm a consumer and I want to buy access to the internet, if I want a fixed line, I've got to pay 331 Rand and I will get a maximum of 1 megabit per second download speed. However, I can go and buy for 150 Rand a month from a mobile operator a package that will give me download speeds of 21.6 megabits per second. Let's take this into practical reality. What does this mean? I'll use my own home example. I have exactly that internet package or fixed line, and I will only get, if I'm lucky, 500 kilobits per second download speed at 3 in the morning. And yes, I promise you I am awake at 3 in the morning. I did test this. I used exactly the same mobile package, which is less than half the cost of fixed line, and I got a download speed of over 10 megabits per second. And this relates to why are we losing fixed lines? Why should I as a consumer buy a fixed line if I can get a better, cheaper service from the mobile operators? And this is where South Africa is in a conundrum, in that we want to move towards the digital era. The way to move to the digital era is to have high capacity, high quality, cheap, fixed line connectivity. But what this picture shows you is that the reality in South Africa is that fixed line pricing is out of whack with the existing situation, and it's also out of line with trends in the rest of the world. And this is a matter that, going forward, all stakeholders, government, ICASA, and licensees will have to come together to work out and address the fact that fixed line costs too much for too poor quality.
Nevertheless, fixed line connectivity is capable, in principle, of providing a much higher quality connection. It's just that not everyone's getting that at the moment.
That's what I'm going to do.
Yes. Okay. Moving on. The fixed line challenge is the problem for us. And some of the challenges of building fixed line networks are listed here. And as I said earlier, fixed lines to the home must be the objective. And fixed lines have a high capital cost, but very low fixed operating costs for almost unlimited capacity. But there are some difficulties with that. One is that up to 80% of these fixed line network costs is civil construction. And there are considerable delays in getting wayleave approval and water use licenses, which artificially increase this cost. And recently I attended the launch of FiberCo, and I'm sure many of you did that too, and they told us that it took them 2 years to get, if I remember correctly, 19,000 wayleaves to lay a fiber from Jello to Cape Town. 19,000, it's a ludicrous number. We have to ensure that we are efficient in terms of new network deployments, and that example cities not efficient. And we also have to ensure that we're efficient in using existing infrastructure, for example, locally funding. And it's a given that for South Africa to become an information society, households must have access to high quality, high speed, low cost fixed line connectivity. Clause 21 of the ECA speaks to the development of rapid deployment guidelines. These never happened. But due to concerns and complaints raised by licensees, ICASA recently took the initiative to address these, and we now have a draft version which we intend submitting to the Minister of Communications early next year. The goal is to streamline the way the process application process for municipality, as well as specified technical standards to ensure that roads when dug up are quickly rehabilitated, and of course are not dug up more often than they need to be. So how can ICASA address the concern of high prices? Prices are an outcome of input costs. We all know that if petrol prices go up, food prices are likely to increase the next few months. Prices are a result of labour costs and capital costs, which are affected by a monetary exchange rate.
That the petrol prices, when it goes up, petrol goes down, it remains, and when it goes up, it goes
down. I'm not going to follow that logic. It goes up, up and down a little bit, yes. Prices are a result of labour costs and capital costs, which are affected by a monetary exchange rate and input duties. In order to resolve this matter, we have to examine the cost drivers throughout the value chain. It's the cost drivers that require regulatory attention and not the retail price itself. We need to address the cause and not the symptom. So high costs to industry may be due to an infrastructure monopoly. It may be due to barriers to network deployment and rapid deployment guidelines are one of the issues we're addressing there. It may be due to a lack of spectrum. It may be due to no spectrum sharing. We have legislative barriers there. It may be due to import duties. It may be due to a volatile exchange rate. Any one of these, or one or more of these high costs to industry can lead to high costs to end users, including a possible monopoly in retail markets, and that in turn leads to a high cost to communications, which is the subject of today's hearings. This picture shows you the value chain in South Africa. There we have, in blue, we have the international connectivity, landing in this example in Cape Town. In red, we have the national backhaul network. In green, we have the metro networks. In orange, we have an access network. And they are listed there. In evaluating all the cost elements and identifying the market power of various role players in specific segments of the value chain will allow ICASA to build cost models for both voice and data services. These models will allow ICASA to effectively regulate prices where necessary. And this diagram, not very well, I'll show you another one, illustrates the components of the cost of a call or a data service. Subsequent to Telkom's presentation this morning, we've inserted this one as well. This alternative picture of the same thing, which is not in your folders. This shows four possible places where one can regulate, where CASA can regulate along the value chain. Number there, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Point four is the interconnection, and that's the lowest level intervention, the termination rates. We have already intervened in that area in the cost of communication. We've just been discussing the glide path on termination rates. And point one is the highest level of intervention, and that's the local loop on money. Again, ICASA has been addressing those. That. The other 2 points I won't go into here. But different parties will benefit differently depending on where we intervene. So the process of regulating markets is illustrated in this diagram here. There are four phases that we have to go through. First, we have to initiate an inquiry. And that involves us going through a process of data collection and analysis. And we need economists, and we need cost accountants, and we need statisticians, and we need engineers, and we need lawyers. And that can take typically 6 to 9 months. And then out of that would come a discussion document and a public consultation process. And we need the same sort of resources, plus, of course, the money to pay for publishing the all of those people and the gazetting of the discussion document. And that takes a minimum of 4 months because of the requirements in the ECA for public consultation. Once we've completed that, we move on to the third phase, is where we would publish a findings document and draft regulations. And once again, we would go through a public consultation phase. And we require the same kind of resources, economists, cost accountants, statisticians, engineers, and lawyers, and this will take at least 4 months. And then we end up with final regulations, which we implement, and in order to implement it, we need cost accountants, and legal, and compliance, and impact analysis to ensure we're doing this. And the whole process will typically take longer than 14 months, and is stipulated in law, and is necessary to ensure evidence-based, impact-based regulation that will support government goals. Decisions must be defensible. And Shailan Bharath, the Competition Commissioner, said used those words in September 2009. And this is a matter that the Competition Commission reiterated by the classes processes during this year. And the recent Competition Commission finding against Telkom resulted in 449 million rand fine. So this is a complex, time-consuming, and expensive process. But we need to do it. We need to do it for both all parts of the market, for both data and voice. And I showed you the four different areas, those four different areas. We need to do that for all four of those areas. Okay. So what would a company like to do? What we'd like to do is we'd like to build a cost model for the voice value chain. And we'd also like to build a cost model for the data value chain. And we'd like to identify the need for invention. We'd like to regulate prices when necessary. And we would like to consider other obligations need to be addressed. And the company needs to spend a considerable amount of time and money building these models. These models are necessary to enable a company to identify and address the causes of high costs to communicate, to make sure that regulatory interventions benefit all South Africans and don't have unexpected adverse impacts. But they are expensive. We'd also like to release spectrum. We'd like to make high demand spectrum available as soon as possible. And we'd like to make it available to all three of these parties that are listed there, to new entrants, to an open access network, and to the incumbents. And we believe this is possible. And the assignment of spectrum should have universal service obligations. And the expected impact of this will be to increase access for all. And the lower frequency spectrum will facilitate a communication providing access, the last mile access to less populated areas, rural areas, and the higher frequency spectrum will facilitate providing more and faster connectivity to the denser urban areas. By having new entrants coming in with some of the spectrum, as well as the incumbents, as well as having an open access network, we would increase competition, leading to lower prices and better choice for the consumer. And by making use of the spectrum, we can expect to get the benefits of GDP growth as per the World Bank forecasts, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. In terms of broadcasting in the digital era, we want, similarly to doing a voice and data value chain analysis, we want to do a broadcasting value chain analysis in order to improve competition. We mentioned earlier how we have, by negotiation, we have reduced some of the prices, but that's not the full story. We need to do a proper value analysis, build a cost model so that we can take the right regulatory interventions. And again, that is a slow and expensive process. We'd like to support development of local content, and it's worth mentioning at this point that after the analog to digital migration, when we do a second digital to digital migration, it will be technically possible to have 140 standard definition TV channels in the UHF band, or 35 high-definition channels in the UHF band, or any combination of those. So what can we also do? Not as much as we'd like to, the short answer. I told you right at the very beginning how most of our funding goes to doing our production work, goes to doing type approvals, issuing telephone numbers, doing standard conventional spectrum licensing, and reviewing interconnected facilities leasing agreements. That's what most of our time and effort goes to, and of course dealing with spectrum issues. We only have about 20 million rand out of our total budget of over 300 million to do all our discretion work. And one market review costs about 5 million rand. Now we need to do 12 market reviews. We haven't got that. So what are we doing about it? We are prioritizing our activities, but we do not have sufficient funds to support Parliament in all of its objectives. We prioritize what we need to do. We've developed a regulatory agenda that takes through to 2018 to support the creation of a digital society. And that is the end of the presentation as we've given it to you. I do have a few more slides, Honourable Chairman, that address some of the questions that have been raised this week. Would you like me to go through this?
Which one? The one from Tuesday.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about the issues of additional aggression. The slides, or you have another slide in relation to what you have presented.
Sorry, Chairman, these are new slides based on the questions that were raised yesterday. In terms of risk and issues like that. Yes. Yeah. Would you like to see those?
No, they were not incorporated in our media, but we feel, you know, through your permission, it will give another dimension to certain things.
And I didn't give you permission to speak English. If you want another permission, or just take in another permission on yourself. how many of those like?
You've actually seen a couple of them. It's about 6 or 7.
6 or 7. No, the difficulty will be that the members won't be having it to follow. But I think they are important slides because they complete the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Without them, we might be asking questions because we don't have that. Probably, what I would suggest is that tea is here, break for the 40.
Okay.
Let's break for 10 minutes or so, 40. And then when we come back, we provide it, because I want to ring the break that get copies for them. Then probably we can look into that. So that
listening to the presentation by Siwozi, a very good presentation.
And the presentation by the regulator, which follow DOC, which also is a very good one, except that I forgot to explain where to move out with Honorable Schneeman, because our work always goes past with the Department of Trade and Industry, where to just go for a few minutes and do attend some other work on that side and come back. Now, there is a motion by member to say probably what is going to help us is that let us proceed with the other presentation. The motivation for the members is that we might spend time asking questions to DOC and ICASA, whereas some of the current presentation are still going to rebut some of the issues. It might be better to take more presentation and have a question session where the questions go across all those who have presented and so on. And we think that probably we might spend time asking questions, but other presentations who are coming or preempt some of the already made presentation and so on. And members, I have to check with you first because that happened offline when we were discussing with other members. But is that agreeable? Thanks very much. The cause of all the trouble, there is this movie, The Native, who caused all the trouble, something like that. But this time it's not the native, it's the research, which caused all these issues. By Access Africa. We happen to get one of the members there, or participant, Professor Gilward, who was part of that broader research and so on. And I don't remember that it could maybe help also to give her last minute, few minutes, just also to take us through in terms of those experiences. And then Telkom will then follow immediately after that. Where is Professor? Oh, okay. Prof. I'm not sure what I would say. A prof would cause all trouble, but it's not you. I understand that it's research. I see the Africa, not you as a person, but you participated during those engagements and other things. We are also grateful, Professor, that you avail yourself to come and talk to us. This is what we'll do more often, to talk to some of the people who are active in the sector and doing research and so on, so that we try to follow things and try what is happening. But without wasting more time, Prof, up to you just to take us through. I hope you will stick around when by the time we ask questions you will be around, so that you can also be able to partake in that particular process and so on. Over to you, Prof.
Thank you also for the previous presentation. I can hopefully go through it more quickly. When I spoke to the researcher for the committee, it was made clear that the intention of these hearings were to try and extend it beyond mobile communication pricing. So I will try and contextualize that a little bit and look at some of the other pricing issues, because they are all outcomes. They're all effectively policy outcomes and regulatory outcomes. So if we're failing there, we need to look at the policy failures that are causing this, particularly the market structure and the institutional arrangements. So I'll contextualize that a little bit, but then I will focus on the prepaid mobile pricing, because that's really where the affordability issues really affect the mass of people in the country, and where the bulk of our research has gone, although we are extending that into broadband data as well, and quality of service. So very quickly, I want to start by looking at the absence of evidence and the difficulties of actually doing this kind of research and having these hearings without the evidence that one would ordinarily have in many countries across the world available. I'm going to look a little bit at the demand-side data as well as the supply-side data, because I think it's really demand-side data that lets the people speak in Parliament. It's really what's happening on the ground, and it's data that simply doesn't exist anywhere else. I'll speak about the negative implications of Africa's position for WICCAT on affordability. I think it's very important that Parliament's aware and can flag future events, long-term treaties and policy commitments that South Africa is making that can negatively affect the cost of communications in the country, and which I would argue are anti-poor in their implications. I want to look at then, I'll go into some of the pricing issues, fixed lease plan and data pricing, as I said, very broad stroke evidence we've got there, and then some more detailed work on interconnection and termination rates and some of the evidence that we have been able to build there and the analysis that we are currently engaged in. And then I looked specifically at the implications of this for retail pricing in the prepaid mobile sector, and then some financial analysis of the implications of the termination rate on the operator, and some recommendations. So I think if we look at the latest census data, if we look at the latest supply side data, the latest GSMA study, all across the world people are speaking about the very the incredible success of mobile communications in the country, of delivering services to the poor. Delivering services that simply weren't delivered by government or telcos for 100 years before that. So I think there's no taking away from the success of what has happened with mobile. But also just to look at those success figures, because I think it is important to in a hearing to try and gather as much of the facts as we can to try and up those and the narratives against each other and see what holds up, to really try and get an understanding of where we are. We do not have 100, 110, 130% penetration in South Africa for mobile phones. We know we don't. We all know people who don't have mobile phones. So basically we need to critique the methodology that is used for subscribers, simply the number of them sold. It is something that is now being raised within the ITU. They're more aware of it. It does affect some of these really nonsensical indicators that we get in relation to mobile. They're very easily explained. The number of them sold, there are more of them sold for surveillance and all sorts of other things. But also there are a large number of duplicate SIM cards, particularly among the poor, as they try to price, better price the products to their buy.
Say, Prophet, I know one member of this committee. I won't say he or she, I would say he or she. There's 5 SIM cards. Now, I'm just wondering how many members they've got it, more than 2 SIM cards. I know here in the committee, that's SIM cards. So, you may profit. I'm just an
idiot.
Why can't the committee say SIM cards within 18?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's important is that this is the kind of data you can only get from demand-side surveys. And it's nice to have the confirmation of census data, but census data really only provides a sliver of ICT data. And so it's really important that institutions who are responsible for gathering this information and this data are funded and budgeted in order to do it, as they are in all other countries across the world. And we simply, you don't get this evidence any other way than by doing demand-side data. You don't get it in supply-side data. You don't get this aggregated bottom of the pyramid, you don't get this aggregated rural, you don't get this aggregated gender from supply-side data. So just very quickly, I think we're also working with the GSMA, we've raised the question as well. They've done a study from the methodology, but won't deal with that now. But they're actually arguing that in South Africa, the 138% mobile penetration factor that has historically been supplied to supply side information is actually only 66% of the population that has communication access. We in fact disagree. We think it's much higher. The census says 85, and our figures that you'll see are about 82%. So we are saying that the 15% odd that is sort of not accounted for by the supply and demand side data is actually repeated in duplicate SIMs. And this is carried through, this is, we had evidence for this from the demand side survey, which actually represents this survey based on the census, which shows that 15% of South Africans have duplicate SIMs. Okay, at least one duplicate SIM. Lots need more than one. So of course, they've been enormous success. These services got rolled out. People have got access for the first time, large numbers of people. Also because of the success of electricity, I should add, in this country, very different than many of the other countries we look at. And so there is a base for people to get these services. However, when you look at what people are doing with these services and how they're using it, it is extremely suboptimal. Usage in South Africa is extremely inhibited. For those who don't have the service, by the cost of service, they simply can't afford to access it. And pricing also limits the way people can use communications. So the users are constantly having to innovate around, you know, what was originally in the old days in calls, because they couldn't afford to send text or make voice calls. And now we see increasing new innovations in terms of data bundles, etc. So the first round of substitution that we saw we had, of course, substitution of voice, which meant people could access it in much smaller quantities than fixed, but you had to have a line wrangle. And then we saw the substitution of voice of text and SMSs from voice. And what you see now in this latest round of data, of survey data, is that there's a movement from text to data. People are buying these cheaper data bundles. We can see that from the costing. We're looking now, we're only going to look at prepaid mobile pricing, but the important caveat of that, the important point to make for that, is that mobile operators are now very much costing their price, their voice and data packages, in terms of their total revenues and bundled together. So, for example, MTN's nominal prices, their main tariff prices have not come down, but they've got very significant data, significant cuts in their data packages, etc. So one needs to begin to look at this. This is the new environment that we're in. It's no longer this neat, silent, stratified, voice and data thing. What we're seeing is that more and more people, of course, are accessing the internet through their mobile phones, and I'll show you some data on that very quickly. But also that they're now substituting the use of social platforms, which they can communicate for free once they've bought the data bundle, instead of using SMSs. And as large number of people using social networking have no privacy issues and various other things, large numbers of people are no longer using SMS, which, by the way, are horrendously overpriced and basically cost zero. So basically people have lost that market. And we can see with the new messaging systems, cheap messaging systems that are for free on different devices, that that's also affecting traditional SMS. Just very quickly to look at, as I said, this is a nationally representative survey conducted in South Africa in September last year, so right similar time to the census. And I just wanted to show that a large number of people are not able to, do not have a mobile phone because they cannot afford it. So the BLT is the base of the pyramid. Essentially what we use there is the National Planning Commission's figure of the public data line or the rate that they've worked out. People need to lift it from in terms of the vision to 2030, which is 432 rand per person per month. So within the BOP, obviously most people, there are more people who can't afford services, and you'll see significantly there in terms of the red is at the BOP. Just very simply to give you a sense of this new environment we're in and where this pricing needs to be placed and where we're going. We see here that, as I said, because we use the census data, we only look at 15 years and older. But we see more and more people are actually signed up on social networks than on email any longer. Email's an old way of communicating. And particularly when you look at other African countries which
be careful, Professor, because behind you the honorable scene, when you say email is an old way of communicating.
There are also some very interesting political applications on Mixit that basically what you're seeing here is this new environment as the use of social networks to drive internet take up on mobile phones. That's the new environment that we're going to be in. Just in terms of owning a phone, obviously for Africa is still very significant. They're the top. But interesting is that obviously growth has slowed down because we're so near the top. But also, what's changed in countries like Kenya, Nigeria, etc., is that they're just really developing extremely fast, exponential internet growth, internet on mobile growth, just very much faster than we are. And of course, in the internet environment, we're very poor, so that's more comparable. And if we look at the share of households with a working computer, that has gone up from the last round a little bit, but really not enough. But what's clear from this is that more people are actually going to be accessing the internet from their mobile phones. Of the 24%, 24.5% that have working computers, only 20% are actually connected to the internet. I'll show you in a minute other places where people connect. But here you can really see Ethiopia. For all of these things, it's an outlier. It's a monopoly, prices are set by the state, it's a very poor penetration and access rate, so it scores very well on pricing, but it's got nothing to reinvest in the network, etc. So it sort of stands on its own. But the rest of these markets have been liberalized and in some cases very effectively regulated, and you can see the incredible growth that was in the last 4 years. And of course in South Africa as well through wireless technology. Just very quickly to show you the national census data and the RIA data that came out at the same time is very, very close, which is always very comforting. Basically fixed lines were at 18% roughly in 2007 and a little bit down in 2011. I've spoken about households with computer radio down, sadly. Television up and households with internet up, really not enough for an economy, South Africa's size and an emerging economy. And then individual growth, very significant, and we see that on wireless dongles and mobile phones. And then, of course, cell phone ownership, very significant, at 82%. Just very quickly to show you where the internet was used in the last 12 months. What I'm really wanting to highlight is mobile phone is at the bottom there. So more and more people are accessing internet, especially where it's been just too expensive, or people haven't had PCs, are accessing the internet on their mobile phones very, very significantly. Internet cafe, these strong historically in places like Cameroon and Ghana, etc., it's never been a big one in South Africa anyway. People still accessing the internet significantly through schools and through work. Just to show you again where internet was first used, in countries like Cameroon, Botswana, South Africa, Kenya, was already quite high take-up of internet access through PCs. So the early adopters actually had quite high, first use of internet on a PC. The late adopters, the countries that are the late adopters of the internet, are accessing it off their mobile phones. Just again to show you what's driving this mobile internet take-up, 28% of South Africans are using mobile to browse the internet, relatively small compared, you'd think compared to your PC usage. Using mobile for Facebook, etc., social networking, 25%. And 17% for emailing. And that's actually diminishing from our previous round survey. Although, interestingly, in countries like Kenya and stuff where you've got very dynamic markets, the prices have come down significantly, all sorts of areas are actually growing. So mobile internet is growing, fixed line internet is growing, mobile banking is growing, everything is growing. I want to make a point very quickly about the challenges of gathering evidence, particularly this forum. Any gathering like this is challenged by classical asymmetry of information. The people who want the information are sitting here, and the people who got the information are sitting in networks. As operators. And they have a need to protect certain information in order to remain competitive, and rightfully so, and one understands that. But there's enormous amounts of information that are freely available. I think this is actually a critical issue here. And it's really based on literature with policy projects, and it's an economic concept that explains that in order to participate in a market, in order to participate in processes, etc., what you want is equal opportunities to have access to information. Okay, so you're entering into a market, you're entering into a process that's taken from market sort of notions of it, but that we all need retain access to information in order to make be equal in our decision making. And I'm pointing out that we are very unequal in our decision making. And we should sort of acknowledge that and see what we can do about changing that. As I said, I think there's certain stuff that is always difficult to exist throughout the world. And then we have a case in South Africa where an economy this size is simply not producing, not providing the most basic indicators to our UN bodies, which we have treaties, etc., for government and for policy purposes, for the regulator to regulate effectively. And I mean, since 2007, South Africa has not submitted data to the ITU. And that puts us with countries in the Indian Civil War, DRC, Sudan, etc. And we cannot even get the most basic information that we can actually get out of, you know, annual reports. Cannot be, you know, got for other policy purposes. So, and regulatory purposes. And I think it's really something the regulator has to set up its regulation, determine the framework and conditions under which information is gathered, and supply to the various agencies that we have to. It will become a laughing stock. Even on the state of the ICU, there's very little data available. Big gap since 2007, one incomplete long questionnaire submitted to the ICU in 2009. South Africa's ranking on the ICU and ICT Individual Index are indicative of both policy failures, but also information failures. I'm not suggesting that we're doing a whole lot better if we provide the information, but there are certain areas where estimates are being made, basically problematic in terms of ICU methodology, but also in terms of what we're providing. So, for example, in the ICU number of internet subscribers on the continent, a country like Zimbabwe, which does not have because of the size of the economy and various other things, has about, you know, 400 per user per subscriber, user per subscription is rated at 400. So there simply aren't 400 people using every subscription in Zimbabwe. So that figure was not what was South Africa, and though a figure was made up for South Africa, which is considerably lower and probably more accurate. But because we're not actually engaging in this information process, we don't actually know how much of this is bad data and how much of this we're doing wrong. Although we clearly know that we are doing a number of things wrong because many of these are multiple factor indices, which go, in the case of the World Economic Forum, right from financial services to education to ICT infrastructure, and we've been slipping down these steadily over the last two decades, right down to 92, 97 over the last 3 years of ICU, and down to 62 for the Network Readiness Index, from 62 to 72. There's some hope on this. I think census data is always a nice sort of line in the sand to work from, but we really do need the demand side, the sectoral demand side data that goes with that. It's very exciting that we will have one of the very few satellite ICT accounts from Stats SA next year off the national account, and it will be drawn into the DOT national portal that they are trying to develop, which will for the third time provide South Africa with real data on the contribution of the ICT sector, not just telecoms, not just network operators, and all the data from the retail sector, manufacturing, etc. on ICT that will be drawn from national accounts into ICT satellite accounts. And I think we'll really begin to see the significance of the sector in terms of the GDP. Just in terms of the environment that we're going into and flagging important things that are coming up, that if we make the wrong decisions now are going to have very severe implications for us in future, I want to flag the WICCID meeting, the ITU meeting in Dubai next week on international telecommunication regulations. The ACTA position and the ECHO position, which is really driving the service to ITU, is extremely damaging for content access throughout the world, but particularly in the developing world. Essentially what ECHNO wants to do, ECHNO is the European Telecommunication Network Organization, operators. Essentially what they want to do is designate internet content providers as call originators and subject them to ordinary sending party network based in order interconnection kind of, and settlement arrangements, that will allow telecommunications operators to charge them rates they believe of interest with the bandwidth that content is consuming, which we saw with all that social networking. Now the point is that bandwidth is paid for as data. people are already paying for that, and what they are getting free on top of that is making an enormous contribution to development and growth throughout the country. I'm not going to spend too much longer on this, but I really would urge people who are going to visit and for the Parliament to be aware of the implications of Africa's position on this, and to consider it and see whether they do agree with it. But essentially, you know, what this does is impose broad regulations on the economic content of the internet that will destroy it, and seeks to redefine very narrow international telecommunication regulation definitions that will encompass this whole larger ICT ecosystem that we've been speaking about, not just the infrastructure. To go quickly to pricing, as I said, I'm going to just go very quickly. I think it's very important to understand that the high mobile prices that have had been the focus of a lot of attention are just one aspect of very high costs across the board in South Africa. And pricing really is one of the key measures of policy outcomes. Okay? Very, your pricing reflects your market structure, your regulation. This is the best indicator you have of whether your markets are working, whether your regulation is working, whether your system is working, your policy is working. What we can see is that obviously fixed lines, we've already had some of that from the process, so I'm not going to spend too long, but what we see is fixed line prices in South Africa are still very high. We continue to use the model, although obviously there are some differences between the prepaid and postpaid model, but we still continue to use the model of high rental prices and questionably lower minutes per use usage prices. But the high rental prices really keep people off the network. Obviously, there is some prepaid way around that, but then it makes the usage prices very high, and people then don't want to use that, and they'll use their mobile phones instead. So there are issues, and I'll remain very high. All I want to point out on this very small slide is that the very bottom here, you've got Egypt, Ethiopia, which I said is an outlier, and Sudan, Tunisia, Bahrain, and various other countries. Tunisia and Morocco and Egypt have the highest fixed line rates in Africa. South Africa no longer has those rates, fixed line penetration. We haven't for some years now. So there is some correlation. I'm not suggesting direct correlation, but there is some correlation between the low fixed line price and the relatively higher uptake that we're seeing there. The other one I really want to stress, because we speak a lot about this pricing in terms of affordability and the poor, and that's correct, but the very high input cost of communications to this economy is killing certain sectors and has prevented the rise of certain obvious sectors like call centers, etc., which do operate, and some of them are on certain kinds of exemptions, e-rate, but it really hasn't taken over as it should have, and a study was done, as you're probably aware, several years ago by the presidency, and telecommunications was identified one of the factors mitigating against these call centers being set up. So it really has implications for job creation, for economic growth. It's not only the retail sector that's important. And our wholesale prices remain very high. They have come down, but they remain very high. So I've put the lease line here, or we've put the lease line here, into the OECD figures, because that is where we traditionally compare ourselves better. But you can see we're very high. I should just point out that Korea is above us there, and that is because with the kind of offerings that they have on fiber, I mean, they're discouraging the use of lease lines. They actually don't want people to waste their time with 34 megabits when they're actually offering sort of, you know, 10 gigabits or whatever, minimum. So we have seen a reduction. There's some sort of strange on 34, actually going up again, which is a bit alarming, but not very significantly. On the broadband pricing, all I want to point out on this slide is that this shows the lowest and the highest price, okay, available. This was from June, was conducted in July 2011, but it was from September. The actual data was only available from September 2010. So it's changed somewhat, and we've seen that there have been reductions, and I'll just highlight a few of them now. But not enough to really change the very dismal picture. This is a log diagram. So in fact, we would be way up there more than you know, it appears on the small screen. And the lowest price in South Africa is higher than most, than the highest price in most other countries, significantly, only because of the log sale. So even though we do see a lot of improvements around data, we still have problems with that, particularly with ADSL. Just to show some of these things, this study is still still underway, and there's not enough to draw any conclusions on it yet, and hopefully there will be soon. But just to show you that the difference in MTN products in these different markets. Okay? So pricing is very much, very dependent on what's happening in that market, and the competitors in that market, and etc. It's not, you know, some sort of automatic pricing thing that happens. Just to show you the differences in the megabits per cent, that's US cents for South Africa and Namibia, just to do a comparison, all those values that it stands in Namibia, South Africa. But you can see, this was done in mid-year this year, and ATO has come down significantly since then, and MTN's also come down a bit then, but not anything near the Namibian rates, for example, which are part of the complete reduction in rates across all services in Namibia over the last 2 or 3 years. Really a fraction of South Africans. And just to broadly counter the argument that you need to be careful, you know, obviously you're paying for what you get, and the quality of service side is absolutely critical to the pricing side, and this study that I'm referring to actually is also a quality of service study, so it will be able to look at what you're paying and what you're getting. And just to show you the argument that we're so expensive in South Africa because we're fabulous, we've got such wonderful quality, this Google study, independent Google study, shows that South Africa is fifth out of African countries in terms of the speed that they're getting for what they're paying. I want to go quickly now to interconnection, because I think it's been argued that it's really mobile that does affect the poor, prepaid mobile in particular, that people are dependent on in order to, you know, be effective in the economy or even in policy. Just to remind ourselves that we regulate mobile termination or interconnection because termination is a monopoly. And we have seen, and you saw in the previous diagrams from ICASA, that those rates, until they were regulated, didn't come down. They went up 500% from time the telecom was privatized to 2001, when the new entrant was meant to come to the market, and they didn't. And they stayed at that high inflated price until there was pressure put on the operators to regulate that. Reduce their price pressure, political pressure, and ultimately regulatory determination. There's now just a vast body of evidence, the termination rates that are set at the cost of an efficient operator and provide an incentive for investment, that people feel that they can actually come into the market space, so it induces new entrants. It promotes competition and economic efficiency in the market, and it will promote universal service by reducing retail rates, lowering the end-user prices. And it's just evidence all over the world and all over Africa now, extensive evidence over Africa. Now, dominant operators often defend the high mobile termination rates and have argued historically in South Africa and elsewhere in the world that if lowered, they're forced to increase retail prices. This is basically often referred to as the water bill effect. Therefore, there will be fewer subscribers. And in particular, the poor will be cut off because of this. And that operators will invest less because they can get less revenues from interconnection. And we've even seen arguments that they would be forced to retrench if the interconnection rate was implemented when it was in 2011. Essentially, I'm not going to get into this argument too much, rather than demonstrate that it doesn't happen. It is a very successful intervention on behalf of Vodafone, contracting very high-level senior academics to do this work, and pushing it through the journal system and putting it through the conference system, and then it became presented at hearings all over the world, and there simply is no evidence underpinning it. In fact, the evidence is to the contrary, which we'll try and show. So the important thing is that mobile termination rate is a rate, it's not a price, okay? It's a rate that is set, that sets the rate for a certain element cost of the network. And for the termination, obviously, of that call on another network. So the wholesale prices are contractually fixed. They tend to be stable, they're not fluctuating. We saw that they haven't changed, you know, haven't changed for nearly 10 years, in fact, or 38. When we talk about the retail prices, the end-user prices, we're talking about many products, as was demonstrated in our survey. We look at all the products across South Africa, and there's over 100 of them. I mean, these are multiple products, a very dynamic market in that sense. Prices vary by product, they often change, they're off-net and on-net prices, they peak, they're off-peak, they're off-off-peak, they're SMS, they're internet, there's data, there's prepaid, there's postpaid. So by talking about a very complex and dynamic pricing system, which is obviously difficult to measure, but we obviously have to do something, and so we do find ways. It's important to note that mobile termination rates are wholesale costs. They're also wholesale revenue. Now, this is, tends not to be presented, sadly, even by the media, but all certainly not in presentations, and certainly not in financials when they're presented, and we'll demonstrate that. So who benefits from termination rate reductions depends on many factors, and it's very specific to the environment in which you're in. Generally, net payers, those people who are terminating more calls on another network, those operators, pay less, and the net receiver receives less. However, we do see that net receivers, those people who are having more calls terminated on the network, may also receive more, as shown in the case of Vodacom South Africa. Okay? So when we're looking at the termination rate, we're looking both at the quantity of incoming calls and the revenues that go with that, and of the outgoing calls. Essentially, what the Waterbed Effect brand theory is simplified to is essentially operators arguing for revenue replacement. If you take interconnection revenue from them, they need something to be given, something else in exchange, or they need to be allowed to put up retail prices in exchange. So as I said, the dominant operators have claimed that due to the low termination rate, they have to increase retail prices. They argue that they have to reach staff and that they will have less money to invest. Now, we can see that, in fact, this revenue replacement strategy is not actually the strategy that's adopted by mobile operators. And, in fact, it's surprising that mobile operators, since the reduction in termination rates, have not sort of patted themselves back on their backs more for the incredible success they've seen since the reduction of termination rates. Their profits are up. The number of subscribers is up. Prices would be possibly down a lot more, but they certainly haven't gone up. And their EBITDAs are either stable or up. So it's not really clear what the fuss is about, other than for the smaller players who have not seen benefits, understandably from what we've already discussed. Just to point out that if there was this relationship between termination rates and retail rates in a classic two-sided market, which is the Waterbed Effect argument, it would have to work both ways. Okay? So if you brought down your termination rate, your retail rate would go up. But if you brought down your retail rate, your termination rate would go up. And we know that the termination rate doesn't do that. Okay? So it cannot fit the classical theory of two-sided markets. If there's no termination rate, we see that. And basically what you could do, there's nothing that stops you, if you're just doing a sort of passing exercise, that you could say, okay, when you have a mobile termination rate of R5, okay, and it's going to be free retail. The operator is just going to give each other R5 for everything. Okay? And then it's not sort of inevitable that this price will produce that. These are decisions that are made by businesses, obviously not the termination rate, but how you respond to it is determined by businesses. So operators do have the choice to pass on the mobile termination reductions, or they can choose not to. Okay, and most of them have chosen not to. Okay, Cell C has done a dramatic cut in prices, which demonstrates the passing on a portion of that. ATAR was a recent offering which basically offers double the amount of time for a set price, indirectly is doing that. So the new entrants are trying to leverage that margin that ICASA spoke about. But basically the incumbents have not. Okay, and obviously the people who are making more money from termination rates, their revenues, a portion of their revenues, are the bigger operators. They're the ones who are going to feel that. But the point is that retail prices are complex, they diverse, there are different pricing strategies by different people and different operators, and we don't see revenue replacement exercises by anyone, even the incumbent operators. And just to also counter some of the arguments that if you've reduce interconnection, if you reduce interconnection rates, you'll also, you know, reduce traffic and profitability of the company. This is a study done by TNG in 2010, and basically you can see there that the minutes of use increases the lower the termination rate is. And that's a global study.
I'm just interested, I don't want to describe you. Now I understand at first bullet about information. Because you see, when these big operators were presenting here during the MDR, you can swear that the following day there will be no company. But the outcome is the opposite. Now this is where the problem is. Because when they were presenting around the MDR, you can swear that the following day there will be nothing company in the country, everything will collapse. But the outcome, as you are saying, as we follow, says the opposite. Now the question is that I don't understand this.
Well, as I said, I think it's a tribute to a very sophisticated and successful number of operators, both the new entrants and the others. And I think I'm just surprised that the sector doesn't take more credit for it. That's all. I'm not going to go through any more of those slides because I think they are there and people can refer back to them. But the arguments around population density, around quality, around all those things. The evidence is not, that's not the case. If you bring down the cost of an efficient operator, you will see efficiencies, you will see increased take-up, you'll see increased traffic, you'll see increased profitability. And the question then becomes, what is the cost of an efficient operator? And ICASA has argued that it needs to be done in a very serious way, because obviously the implications of setting the price too low in a particular market will have negative implications for the sector, the viability of the sector. But if you look at what has happened across the continent, and if you look what happened globally, that figure is very close to zero. Okay? Kenya has just this week, again after the moratorium by government on the effect of the regulator on their mobile termination rate, has done their review, they've now done their full cost analysis, held up the market for 18 months, and it's trying to be totally viable. The moratorium, the drug cost is going to hit the moratorium off. So the prices are down to fractions of US cents. And just basically to just refer you, just to be on Jean Provocateur a little here, basically the latest WCD interconnection report suggests that a zero-based rate is really sort of appropriate for this new environment that we're in. You look at the termination rate. I just want to quickly go to the point that the chairperson was raising. And I've just done it this way because it's sort of quite scary, otherwise there's lots of tables and columns. But basically when the interconnection termination rate first reduction happened, there were these kinds of reports. MTN and Vodacom to billions over new termination rates. Okay? And sadly, these reports, these financials, these usually come from financial reports, operator financial reports. And they are spun, and the media just run the spin. There is no critique of the financials at all. Maybe we benefit from that too, but it really is very sad that there are very few financial journalists that actually work through this. Rate cut cost to Vodacom $200 million. Okay? So that's how it's reported, but if that's what the financial sector did, a massive 10% loss in the month since the first rate cut was implemented. Revenue, income from interconnection. No consideration of the reduced cost of interconnection. Okay? So firstly, the net amount is far less than this. The net amount of revenue from interconnection is far less than this, firstly. And secondly, we'll see that Vodacom has actually grown its interconnection revenues during this time. Rate cuts knocked Vodacom, $400 million less revenue. No winners for interconnect cuts. Staff retrenchment to offset impact. Vodacom says that it may have to offset staff, and it may lose, 800 million will be lost in revenue. No qualification. Now, two more years of interconnect pain. Two more years of interconnect pain. Says that Vodacom has lost $1.5 billion in revenue. and 500 million net in internet loss. Okay? 2 more years of internet pain. Okay. And then perhaps Ms. Scott Craig can explain this to us. But we found it rather strange that he was arguing that the retail price goes up if he was collecting quotas when the termination rate is reduced. Especially as this came shortly after the fabulous 99 cent introduction of the cut price into the market. So basically what we found after the third interconnection cut, so the study we did after the first year of interconnection termination rate reduction, we thought there was actually almost zero impact on pricing in South Africa. Selby and ATA had attempted to, and ATA just kind of the end of that period anyway, but they had attempted to bring in these price reductions, especially on their on-net calls, but they were, they basically weren't able to get enough that margin to put pressure upward on the prices, and the prices didn't go down. And so at that time for the cross-country Africa study that we do, the prices dropped there from the ranking there for South Africa was 30th on the cheapest product from the dominant operator, that's the OECD low user basket that ICASA referred to. We only did the low user basket for prepaid mobile. And then 32 on the product of the cheapest product in the country. So that will see actually switch it now with Cell C and ATA's new latest offering, but Cell C's offering, that actually switches and we move from 32 to 19 in those rankings through one termination rate cut and a response, enough room for the new entrants to be able to respond to that. So at that point when we saw, Cell C is black and ATA pink, and we see that they tried to come in and undercut Vodacom, which is red there, with the latest offering, Vodacom initially responded to that 99 cents cut, and it seemed that for the first time we were going to see the pricing pressure we've seen in other parts of the continent when the price was dropped enough. But unfortunately, that turned into some promotion, and it's no longer offered. And probably because essentially, Vodacom is getting their own the price elasticity of their own users' willingness to go to another network. Okay, so if we actually look at these financials, we see here, I mean, again, very strange, because Telkom has been arguing about the termination rate reductions. And we see Telkom as a net beneficiary of this. So we're not really clear, unless they actually argue for some sort of symmetry, which is how the world is going, so a symmetrical rate between mobile and fixed. But in fact, to Telkom, because they're net payers, of course, those massive mobile networks out there, they're net payers of it, and their internet revenue is up, expenses are down, so their net improvement was 432 million, which I think is just about the same as a Competition Commission fine.
Don't put their salt in their wound. Otherwise, I'll remove you. They just proceed.
I know it's meant with all my patriotic concerns. The other thing, of course, is that Telkom and Yotel did pass on their termination rate reduction, which is great, and has obviously brought those prices down. If we look at Vodacom's statement, their loss statement, their service revenue, their total is up 7.8%. EBITDA, you'll see on another slide, are slightly up or stable, I think I'll have a look at that. Their net profit is up 27% in a global recession. I think most businesses would be delighted with that. The impact of mobile termination rates in South Africa from Vodacom's perspective, their interconnect revenue is down by 10.3%. Their expenses are down, though, by 13.4%. And the interconnect profit is up by 6.2. Okay, so they have an additional 66 million from their termination rate revenue. If we look at MTN, not quite as bad, but it's very similar picture. Revenue, total revenues are up by 7.7%. I should add that comparing these things is always very difficult because we don't have that comparative schedule that should be available in terms of a regulation. So Vodacom reports over a different financial year to MTN, which makes comparison. comparison is very difficult for a regulator or for a researcher or anybody else. And they also report different things. So a lot of the MTN and Vodacom in some areas, but not that, report for the whole of Africa without disaggregated, sufficiently disaggregated data for South Africa. But here you can see basically the EBITDA margins, okay? The profitability is even, it's up. And at 34%, it wasn't bad at all. Okay, that's good business, that's telecom. But it's up by 35%. And also they continue to invest. The argument that there's going to be no investment, investment is up as well. Maybe it would have been up more. So if we look at MTN in the financial year ending December, there's still a net revenue, there's still the net receiver of 741 million from interconnection. And of course, overall they're more profitable. So Vodacom is 66 million profit from revenue from interconnection after the cut. Net profit from termination is 1.14 billion. MTN, net profit from termination, 741 million, okay? No increases in price, retail prices, no net investment, and hopefully still no retrenchment of staff. The problem is that small termination rate reductions that we've seen in South Africa are still far from the cost of an efficient operator. And it means that South Africa has not seen the same dramatic price decreases as we've seen, for example, in very in-depth studies we've done in Namibia and Kenya, but also in Nigeria, in Uganda, everywhere, Botswana, everywhere that they've regulated the termination rate. You can see here, just with the countries that are part of our research Africa network, just a few of them, that have introduced cuts and we've done studies on. If you look at that US cents column there, we can see that 10 years now down to 1.6, and that's part of a glide path that will take it to 0.99 for US cents. 2013, and South Africa is here at 7.5, and by the end of the period, we'll be at 40 cents, 40 South African cents. Okay, sorry, not US cents. So the, you know, if you look at the glide path here, glide path of 0.3 fuller by 2014, it's obviously a similar rate that's a little bit stronger than that. Okay, so basically the termination rate, to conclude, is low. Below the cost recovery of terminating on another network, you will still get arbitrage traffic routing, and this can result in undesirable economic conditions. And as I said, there is this argument that zero rating should be on the card. Just to conclude, the traffic is a bit complex, and I think when the operators present here, they're going to show you how complex they are. There's also a lot of international evidence that demonstrates through benchmarking, which, you know, South Africa's not that unique. There are lots of differences in different countries, and markets are very different. But there are a lot of countries you can benchmark from. And if you look at the termination rate from these different benchmarkings, you'll actually see that the rates that these operators are all coming to over periods of time is all quite similar. In fact, regulators could save a lot of public money and their own time if they actually collaborated across Africa on setting these rates, especially with operators working across the continent. Cost-based termination rates, there's enough evidence to demonstrate lead to more and fair competition, therefore more subscribers, more uptake of services, more traffic, more investment, and that actually grow the pie. You don't have to replace revenue elsewhere because you actually grow the number of subscribers, you grow the traffic, you grow the profitability of companies. So basically what we need is a quick and steep glide path to lower termination rates that will bring us more rapidly in line with the rest of the continent and world, and will bring us to the cost of efficient operator in this market. Thank you.
Thank you, Prof. Telkom, you can further. You speak, Prof. Why I was raising that matter, what you are presenting. The chairperson, the former chairperson of ICASA, I take a note that once the parents, always the parents. But the former chairperson of ICASA, Mr. Mashi, has once told this committee that this sector is a very, very vicious sector, where dog eats dog. Sometimes sometimes the mother eats the father in their quest to making more money. It doesn't matter what happened. But I was raising that matter critical because you see, if you got the operators come and make presentation, in a process as much as business, but in a process, what does that mean to us as public representatives in engaging with them? And it raised the question of the relationship and the trusting of what they are saying. That's what I was raising. I think it's critical. Probably they say because they were politicians, they are business, they were running companies. But the fact of the matter is, what must be our attitude in engaging with them when always when they raise the issue, the reality is the opposite? What become the engagement, the rules of engagement? I think it's very critical, but probably because we are in different spheres of authority, it doesn't matter. But I think they must start to look at it in that manner. That in a process, you need to understand the sector and the industry and the operator. And in a process, you as legislators want to understand them and believe what they are saying. But if what they are saying always becomes the opposite of what they are saying, what it means at one point we're going to do radical things, even when they want us and say, no, don't do that because it might be dangerous for the economy, for the country. But we say, you, can we trust you exactly and continue doing things or legislate otherwise in a detriment of the country? And at that time, the blame will be pushing to us, whether they are creating this distance between this us and them in relation on what they say to us and so on. So I think the critical matter we need to look into is the relationship and the trusting of what they are saying, so that it helps us when we do legislation and other things to take them seriously what they are saying, because this might result where we don't take them seriously. We make a legislation, they come and presentation, this one, let's continue with what we think is better. That's just to them aside. Whereas at that time they are raising critical issues for the country and the sector. So I think they start to rethink how their posture when engaging us and how close to the truth on the issues they are raising. Like I've been always saying, it's not to us you can say all these other things, but what's important is that, or the fact before us is that now service delivery protest has started to put on their list the cost to communicate. That's become an issue for us as politicians because we get voted by those people. So to ask whatever you say, the first of them, as I asked at the beginning, and then you tell me that now South Africa is number one in terms of the cost to communicate we're the less cost country. So they don't understand what you are saying. But as long as we're number 8, number 19, or number 10, there's still a problem which needs to be dealt with. Thanks very much, Prof. Telkom, I hope you are ready.
Yes, we are.
I know we are a fixed line, don't know anything much about technology, but but I'm told there's a lot of technology which also go into a fixed line. It's not just about the line.
Welcome, gentlemen. You can take us through your presentation.
Great, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, and our honorable guests, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to spend the next hour or so talking through the thinking and the submission from Telkom with regards to the issue of the high cost of communication. And I think that I must say that it's been quite refreshing listening to the research and also listening to the perspectives brought from the DOC as well as ICASA on this very important issue. There are a number of our colleagues from Telkom, which we will deal separately with the issue of Telkom as well as ATA. But I think some of the key issues are quite similar, and some of the colleagues will also contribute to the conversation.
Marcos.
Yes, sir.
You see that colleague of yours looks to you intimidating me. I don't know what you want to ask.
No, he will take over shortly, and then we will talk through. The intent is not to intimidate you, Leon. So our intent is to try and go through this discussion from a number of different perspectives, because whilst there are many issues on the table, and it's quite easy, and we've heard from some of the earlier presentations, how quickly we get to headlines without looking at the context as a whole. And part of my objective is, in this introduction and the context, is to try and create a bit of context so that we try to understand that the issues are not as binary as they are sometimes presented. As much as I do, I was saying to Chris earlier, that as much as I do feel for him that he cannot get the 1 megabit sync at 3 a.m., at that time he should be sleeping. However, we will go through, you know, there are lots of contextual issues. It's not as simple as 21 megabits, that's just 1 megabit. It's not. We need to be able to get into the detail and all of that. So I will go through the introduction and the context. Isa will talk through some of the work that we are aware of around the pricing comparisons and the benchmarks around the world, specifically using voice as an example. I think there's a lot of stuff that as an organization we have done over the last few years to try to improve or to make it more affordable for people to communicate. There's a number of things that impact on the cost of communication, not the least of which being the termination rate, not the least of which being other regulatory obligations that we have, the cost of regulation, the market environment, sometimes the drive more so for liberalization relative to some of the obligations we've got, and we'll talk to some of those. But ESAP will also focus a bit more tightly on the issue of termination, both on mobile and fixed. We'll also then cover off some of the challenges as we see them, and a couple of thoughts around where we think the way forward is. So it is quite important to again thank and acknowledge the fact that we absolutely are in the movie that says that if there is something that can be done to improve the cost of communication in South Africa, we want to be part of that. That is the movie that we're in, and we're interested to do that. We are of the view that the cost of communication impacts every sector of the economy. I think even more so in broadband than it does in voice, because we do believe that the future is data. The initial focus and attention to the cost of communication and the impact of that as driven by this portfolio committee and members of parliament is an important piece of work that needs to be done. We see this from the discussions from 09. We see this as a continuation, and we want to be able to continue to participate in a way that is constructive. We therefore want to say that we support this review process and the initiative that is taken by the portfolio committee. So one of the key things that I would like to be able to do, I think for all of our benefit, and I'm sorry for people who are aware of this, but my deep secret research is that not many people are, is to give this committee a bit of a better context around Telkom. And the narrative that we are working from is that a lot of the thinking around Telkom and its impact on the cost of communication of the industry as a whole is sometimes misinformed by a view that Telkom is a huge lumbering monopoly that is impeding the growth of data, the cost of communication, and all of that.
I'm told we are an anaconda.
No sort of metaphors. I don't think I want to check for a company like ours. But I'd like to be able to, with your permission, Honorable Chair, to just share a couple of facts about where our business is and where it has been for the last while. So again, maybe four key areas: economic, competition, workforce, as well as regulation. There's a number of key trends that create a very challenging environment for a business like ours. What we have seen, a very big part of our business is in fixed voice. And with mobile substitution coming out of not only developments in technology, but a decisive strategy to liberalize the communications industry, we continue to see increased decline in that part of our business. Fixed mobile substitution will absolutely continue. It has done so in many parts of the world. As we try to grow data, we are not in a position where at this point we are growing it fast enough to be able to compensate for the differences in fixed voice revenue. And in the environment in which we operate, not too different to many other parts of the world, but quite specific to developing economies, is that we've got an ever-increasing cost structure. So there are very big challenges on the economic front. On the competitive front, I think that in the 80 or so years since the advent of mobile in this country, and a competitive framework that has enabled mobile to thrive, we've seen the two big players grow quite aggressively. And, you know, while it is good for them, it has also become, it has been a challenge for us. Because along with that, it is our view and our understanding that the sort of obligations that we've had to sit with, they have not necessarily had to sit with. And as such, they are able to make decisions purely on absolute competitive and market and economic rationale, as opposed to addition to universal service obligations. From a workforce and infrastructure standpoint, I mean, Telkom is quite an old company. We've got about 22,000 employees now, many of whom have been with us for a long time. And as the technology has changed and as then people have grown, we continue to face challenges around the correct mix of new workforce, aging workforce, relevant skills and experience. And this is something that we continue to work on. The mobile business that we've recently invested in, which is ATA, I think that based on a lot of review, both locally and internationally, it is quite a challenge to come in as the first mobile operator in the market. However, for us to be able to make a proper shot at it, which there are some green shoots, we have to continue to ramp up quite aggressively. In our attempt to be able to do that, there are also a number of things that are quite needy, where things like site sharing, availability and access to sites is not as smooth with some of our competitor colleagues as it should be.
Also, you've got a test of your own medicine now, but only other side.
Moving right along, Chair. One of the biggest one of the biggest challenging areas for us, and this is not to take anything away from the good work that IHASA does, is that there are a number of regulatory pressures that face our business. There are a number of obligations that still sit with us, which are at a huge cost, which we do not, for example, believe are still relevant. One of the simpler ones, just to illustrate the point, relates to the payphone obligation. We have an obligation to provide payphone-based voice services to the entire nation at quite a significant cost, at which we make a ridiculous loss. In an environment in which, at a voice level, mobile, both for penetration, whether 85 or 138, both for penetration and cost standpoint, it has rendered that obligation irrelevant. But it is something that we continue to be able to, that we are still expected to be able to service. And the engagement with the CASA and all the role players, these are some of the things that we try to be able to make sure we can get out of our sort of space. Okay. So I think in summary, the issues or the factors that impact on price, there's a lot of them that are both within our control and outside of our control. And from a pure, like any other business, the stuff that sits with us, we need to continue to manage more effectively so that we can bring those costs down. But the stuff that sits outside of our control, like, for argument's sake, the other license operator input costs, such as the simulation costs, the regulatory improved costs, as I described earlier, the market environment, as well as obviously, as a company that is listed, also the return that we need to give to our shareholders in receipt of our national government. In that regard, whilst there are lots of these costs that, you know, contribute to ultimately the cost that the customer pays, a lot of them are quite fixed. In our analysis, from a telecom standpoint, up to 45% of these costs are fixed. So fixed only are fixed in the sense that it takes a lot longer to be able to actually change them. If you then look at telecom in relation to the market and in relation also to the composition of the different parts of the market, the mobile market is up to, if not more than 3 times the size of telecom core revenue, and the future growth is in data. As such, we are in a bit of a no man's land, as it were, because the market is developing in one way. Our key revenue line is under threat from fixed mobile substitution. And I think within that context, it is important to understand that in the current market, telecom is a small player. It is a very, very small player. And I think when we look at, in partnership with the work that the DDG and the DOC are doing from a policy standpoint around Broadband 2020, etc., while we absolutely need to and want to play a role in that, it is not the absolute and exclusive responsibility of telecom. And that is similar to the issue of the cost of communication. While we want to play absolutely a role in that, it is not the exclusive responsibility of telecom. It has to be something that the industry looks at as a whole. The role that telecom plays in both issues and others, from either a social mandate standpoint or an overall developmental agenda, needs also to be understood within the context of the size of telecom in this current market, which it has been small for the last while. This slide also just talks to some of the things that I've spoken to earlier around the changes in the composition of our total revenue, where you see that fixed voice continues to be under a lot of pressure. Interconnect is a small part for us. Data, we're trying to cover aggressively. Mobile is still small. And as such, over the last sort of 4 or 5 years, we've remained flat under very challenging circumstances. I have spoken to some of these issues, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them again. I mean, the one that I would like to be able to pick up on is number 2 on regulation. Around spectrum, fixed termination rates, which in our view do not recognize access cost. So one of the things from a conclusion that we'll come to is that we absolutely support a termination regime that is based on cost, because we think that that will ultimately be reflective of what the consumer wants to pay and what the market, and where the market will be able to achieve reach equilibrium. This is always an interesting slide in addition to the comments I have made earlier. And it's actually quite telling in terms of the competitive landscape based on JSC Market Cap August 2012. And it looks at both the holding company and operating company relative to telecom. At the top, just in terms of the size of the businesses that we are dealing with, you've got Vodacom as part of Vodafone with a market cap in excess of 1,000 billion. You've got Neotel, which is part of the Tata Group, with market cap, which is 66 times the market cap of Telkom. You've then got a couple of other companies, which are also part of other bigger groups, the smallest of whom is 20 times the market cap of Telkom. Again, the point that I'm trying to create from a contextual standpoint is that Telkom is a very small part of the big picture here. And I think whilst we are very interested to make sure that we can progress issues of access for DSL, we can progress issues of coverage, penetration, and cost, we also need to be able to conceptualize that within the size and the role that telecom can play. I don't think the next slide needs to go into, but the blue dot is telecom, yellow is MTN, and red is Vodacom. And maybe lastly, before I head over to Isaac, one of the big challenges for us again, coming to the positioning around Telkom, is that historically Telkom has been seen as a monopoly, and it has been loaded with a lot of regulatory obligations. I made the example of the public telephone obligations, direct inquiries, provider of services in the last resort, where we have to fulfill a broader mandate than just narrowly on a commercial basis. Number two, in relation to our mobile competitor partners, we have service charge obligations. Access to critical spectrum is not necessarily beneficial. Possible energy obligation, as well as obviously given the infrastructure that was invested as part and parcel of a broader USO mandate, a big access line deficit that sits in our books. As a result, we are settled with the provision of unprofitable services in a competitive environment. And this is not entirely sustainable at the price. Secondly, as a business, some of the regulatory obligations and the burdens actually do put absolutely squarely at risk the sustainability of Telkom. Okay, and with that I'd like to hand over to Isaac.
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members of the Committee, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Perhaps before I start my part of the presentation, I would just like to put on the record...
Afternoon, sir. Now you can try what you were trying to do.
Chairperson, I was about to say, it's not me that's intimidating you, it's you that's intimidating me. But I'll try and proceed, nevertheless. We've seen a lot of different studies, a lot of different reports, doing some benchmarking, trying to indicate how communication prices in South Africa compare Africa internationally. This slide, just a brief summary, it's been done by Terrifica. Telkom uses this international company, and you'll see on this graph, it basically deals with local peak and long distance peak, and of course the off-peak rates. We didn't want to go through in detail with each slide. Suffice to say, Chairperson, is that the rate bar that you see there is basically Telkom. So in some instances, yes, Telkom is closer to the middle. It's not the worst or highest prices. It's not the cheapest. But it's more or less the range of a medium. You will notice that off-peak is
medium to well.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jefferson. If we move on to line rentals, they're slightly a different picture in the sense that Telkom is tending towards a more expensive side when compared to some of the benchmark countries. But I need to point out, and even in this instance, one needs to consider the underlying costs that are involved in providing these services. A lot of these studies, they look at the retail price, but they don't necessarily look at input costs that a specific company, for example, would face in providing a service. To give you an example, a company in Norway, we, for example, not serve with 22,000 fixed line employees. So the input cost is higher, and the tendency of that is generally that the retail prices would be higher. So what can operators do to lower the cost of communication? What can we at Telkom do? We can most certainly reduce the prices in nominal terms, in other words, just decrease the retail price. We can also perhaps just keep the price at the same level. So while inflation is still there, customers are paying the same price as they did last year, and in real terms, the customers actually experiencing a price reduction. In other words, while the cost of living is going up, the customer is still paying the same amount and is actually receiving a reduction. Operators can also reduce or launch new products and services. The benefit of these, of course, are apart from innovation aspect, is that they tend to compete with existing products and services. So when you launch a new product, in order for there to be take-up for that new product, it has to be competitively priced with existing products and services. So that usually has also the tendency of lowering cost of communication. And similarly, product enhancement. So these are the things that operators can do, basically, very briefly on a high level, what's in our control. Of course, what is not listed here is what the policymaker can do, what the regulator can do, etc. And I think one of the, and I'll just
leave. I'm not sure about the policymaker and the regulator. We have to legislate.
That's not necessarily a bad thing, Chairperson. So, but as soon as you increase competition, as soon as you provide enabling legislation that will allow competitors to compete with one another, you will receive the benefit of lowering cost of communication. So how has Telkom contributed to the process? I don't want to go into too much detail, Chairperson, you've got the detail in front of you, but in 2009, for example, although Telkom was subjected to price control regulations, and although we could have increased prices at a certain level, Telkom acted responsibly and actually increased the bid file with the regulator was far below allowable increase. In essence, meaning a customer was about 3.2 billion rand saving for customers. Same in 2010, slightly less, but still a couple of billion rand, which Telkom could have put in its own pocket and decided to say, well, let's act responsibly, let's try and keep prices down or at the same levels and forgone those revenues. A very interesting one, because obviously broadband prices are key for us. And I'll show you a couple of slides later that in real terms, Telkom has actually reduced the prices of its broadband offerings between 86 to 100%. And of course, a very specific issue here is the one of fixed termination rates, mobile termination rates, and like some of the previous presenters have indicated, Telkom has given pass-throughs to the end users, and conservatively that amount is 2.1 billion rand. So just very briefly, you'll see from the heading there, Telkom has really tried to keep prices below inflation. And just to contextualize that discussion, you must consider that Telkom faces input costs, which increases in line with inflation, sometimes above inflation. So for a company to keep its prices below inflation is quite challenging. You will see, and I think credit to the committee and to the regulator, is that communication prices have indeed actually risen more or slower than some of the other indices. For example, if you look at education, food, even housing, medical expenses, those costs for the public have increased far more aggressively than prices of communications. And once again, the bottom line there, Telkom's line rental, you know, as expensive as you may experience it to be, relative to some other products and services, Telkom still basically cross-subsidizing each and every customer to the network when it comes to line rental. And the graph here, very, very briefly, you'll see the bottom line, green one, that's a good one, that is the Telkom price filings, and you'll see the red one, that was just inflation. So the price increases have been far below inflation. Telkom's contribution to DSL or broadband costs, In nominal terms, yes, Telkom has reduced the prices of its DSL offerings. I'll focus on the easy one, Fast, which is the entry product. In essence, I think we're charging today about 169 rand per month for the entry level DSL product, which is a decrease from the price that it was charged in 2006. Now, if you move to the next slide, and what we'd like to show here is, considering that Telkom has reduced the price, and considering the fact that inflation, the effect of inflation was actually increasing cost, what customers in real terms have actually experienced is for the Fast one, the cheap one, the home desktop 384, is over 100% reduction in the price in real terms. Just to drive that point home again, so prices of product and services, cost of inflation is going up. Telkom has kept its price the same or has reduced the price, and the cumulative effect of that is actually decreasing price for consumers. There's been a lot said about wholesale input costs and that input cost drives, in some instances, the retail prices. This slide just briefly indicates some of the products and services used by the wholesale customers, in other words, compared to Telkom's retail business. And you'll see one where IQ Connect price reduction of 30% earlier, I think it was the 1st April this year, thanks to the good work of the council regulator. But in addition to that, there's been a consistent... Thank you, Jefferson. So addition to that, and some of the more, let's call it voluntary price reductions, you can see there, Metro Clear, even Express, and a lot of these products and services, like I said, for the end user, they may not really know what it's all about, but for licensees that buy products and services or from Telkom, they've seen a huge reduction in input costs. And I must point out, this was just in the last year. In previous years, there was also there's been aggressive price reductions. With regards to price reductions for fixed to mobile calls, I think it's quite evident there that fixed to mobile calls have significantly reduced since the intervention that has been put in place from the regulator side. Product enhancement and service offerings, you did, I did indicate earlier on. So, on some level, what an operator can do is just to reduce prices, okay? And customers obviously see a monetary benefit if the operator does that. In addition to that, the launch of new services and products, innovative products, actually also lowers the cost of communication because these products and services are competing directly with existing products and services. And there's a whole list of them. The list is actually quite more extensive than this, but I've just highlighted a few to say we are trying to be innovative. We are trying to put out new products and services there that meet customer demands. As I indicated earlier on, in addition to price reduction, there's also other things that operators can do. With regards to the upgrade of DSL speed, and I've noted the complaints earlier on by the ICASA representative about the slow speed and all of that. But Telkom, for example, has upgraded its entry broadband product from 384 to 1 megabits per second. This upgrade basically has come free to customers in the sense that customers now got a 1 megabit service, and while previously this service was offered at about 300 rand per month, they're now getting this service at 165 rand per month. So once again, in real terms, there is benefit for consumer because they're not paying for the upgrade. Very briefly on the issue of fixed termination rates, I do believe that fixed termination rates and input cost to operators needs attendant, and it's important. The fact that it took Telkom approximately 16 years to properly renegotiate integration agreements with mobile operators and to increase its interconnection fee is testimony to how difficult it is to actually and how important that is for an operator. But in essence, the point I would like to make here is when the original interconnection rate was set at 21 cents, that was really done in order to give new entrants a head start, to give them an up, you know, because it was assumed at that point in time that market would only, you know, be about 500,000 customers over a 10-year period. I think they achieved that number within the first 6 months or the first year, and I'm sure Mr. Alan McCrae can actually testify to that. The point I'm trying to make here is that interconnection or termination rates was critical or seen as a critical tool to allow new entrants to become more competitive. This slide, you can see the blue bars there are basically amounts that have been packed over to the mobile operator.
I think they're blue bulls.
check this, the blue bar there for clarity. The green bars are revenue received from Telkom by the mobile operator. You can see quite disparity there. And over this period, basically, Telkom has paid over approximately 34 billion rand to the mobile operators. And it's very important to note that interconnection revenues are a very important source of revenue for operators to compete. And we believe, and certainly our view, that the incumbent operators have used this very big source of revenue to actually grow their network and to become more competitive and to provide very low on-net charges, which all of this, of course, resulted in fixed mobile substitution. Very briefly, shortcomings of existing call termination regulations. Chairperson, it is our view that the the mobile termination rate allows the mobile operators to recover basically in essence the cost of their access network as well as their conveyance network or transport part of their network, while the FTR that was set for Telkom only recovers the conveyance portion on the back of part of Telkom's network. Now there's a rationale for that, and that is that the regulator has used the regulatory accounting system, and the methodology used in those accounting systems was different for mobile and fixed, and hence you get this discrepancy. The point we're trying to make here is that we believe that the FTRs have not been set at a fair level, and it should actually go up. In addition to that, I've already indicated that Telkom is really providing customers access to the network at low cost. That is the phenomenon you always hear about access line deficit. So Telkom is basically cross-subsidizing customers to get onto its network. And Telkom is doing that through profit making, through call volumes or call charges. And of course, as those become more...
Mr. Kutner, there's some difficulty on your presentation, but you can easily solve them, if you may. You see, when you are making a legislation, we are told, of course, that we must adopt the simple English language in making legislation and so on and so on, even the policy, so that it's easy for any person to read and understand. By the presentation, there are a lot of things which we don't know what is it. Maybe you assume that we do, but there's a lot of things there. I remember the first time when I came to the committee, someone was talking about hands. Then I thought, hey, there are also parties here, a lot of hands and other things, and realized later I did something else. Please, if you can just be kindly, sometimes to send up very speak. Thank you.
Chairperson and members of the committee, my sincere apologies. I think this is an oversight on my side. I don't know if I should go back perhaps a couple of slides, but these on this slide, the FTRs are standing for fixed termination rate, and that is the charge or the interconnection fee that Telkom is charging other operators to terminate calls on its network, fixed termination rate. The MTRs, which I've used in previous slides, is an acronym used for mobile termination rate. So when Telkom terminates a call on a mobile network, let's say for example Vodacom or MTN, it pays an interconnection fee to that party, and that fee is called a mobile termination rate, or very shortly MTR. So MTR is for terminating calls on a mobile network, FTR is for terminating calls on a fixed network. I'm not sure if there's other acronyms. I'll move on and I'll make sure.
Proceed moving forward as long as you bear in mind. I'm sure we'll take the other ones. We'll let you know.
Thank you very much for your indulgence, Chairperson. And we'll send you an updated presentation where we can remove all these acronyms or at least explain them. Some of the challenges...
footnote will do.
We'll do that, Chairperson. We'll send you an updated presentation. Just perhaps to reiterate, in one of your questions on the notice sent out to operators, what are the challenges that they are facing? Some of the key challenges here, declining voice revenue, the access line deficit that Telkom is experiencing, we believe an inappropriate termination rate regime because FTR or fixed termination rate has not been set at correct level. The asymmetry in the termination rate, what I mean by that is the mobile operators get a termination rate which is far higher than the fixed termination rate, although the costs are converging. And in some instances, a lot of operators actually opt to use wireless or mobile technologies because the fixed network is just too expensive. There are, of course, legacy regulatory obligations, which is also input cost. The fact that Telkom continuously has to expand and renew its network, cable theft and breakage, I will not go into detail there. But all of these are basically, in some instances, costs which has to be covered in some form or the other. So if I can very quickly and briefly summarize, because I believe I'm the only thing standing between yourselves and lunch, we do believe that...
I'm glad you have noticed.
Jefferson, I'll speed up from here. We do believe that termination rates have a huge impact on the competitiveness of the sector and the overall cost of communication. We also believe that the real cost of communication has reduced in a number of areas. We're not quite convinced that in all aspects that reduction in call termination rates have benefited consumers. Certainly we'll claim from our side, obviously as a fixed line operator, that we have done certain pass-throughs to cut them, and we can actually show you, we can prove it to you. And we do believe that the existing call termination model should be reviewed. So in conclusion, the chairperson, Telkom is committed to continued reduction in the cost of communications. We do understand that we've got a very important role to play, and we are committed to support the government in reducing the cost of communication. In that regard, we also support that termination rates should be cost-oriented. We also believe that it should allow for full cost recovery. We would like to argue that new entrants should be given higher asymmetrical termination rates, and I think I'm sure my ATO colleague will expand in his presentation on that. We do believe that the current FTRs and MTRs, the mobile termination rates and fixed termination rates, shouldn't such a big discrepancy between the two, and the two should be converged, and there should be a single, simplified termination rate for all operators in the industry. I think that brings us to the end of our presentation. Chairperson, we could see honourable members. Thank you very much for your time and listening to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kutra. And that to my boss, do you want to do something? Oh, cool. Kutri? Kutri, yes. Why you seem to want to the young government?
No, I've got nothing further to that, Honorable Chair. Thank you. I think they're asymmetric. Thanks very much, Tehom.
I'm glad you said you are going to spend an hour. You spend around 35 minutes.
So your hour, now I know your hour is 30 minutes, okay.
That's good. Probably what we will do is to break for lunch. Lunch will be, you have 10 right in straight to the dining hall. That's where lunch will be. When you get out of the door, you turn right, and then you go in. The sooner people get in there, the better, because that will reduce the time we spend for lunch. And we should be back around 10 to 2, starting proceeding with our work. But the other thing which I must also indicate is that both in Yotel and CELC, they are no longer presenting tomorrow, they will present today. We are still trying to speak to Vodacom and MTN. So if as far as possible, if we take more presentation today, so more time tomorrow will be more discussion than continuing presentation. But Neotel, CELC, they will be presenting today, not to tomorrow as originally was reflected in the plan. We can break for lunch. We'll be back at 10 minutes later.